If everyone, excuse me, if the clerk will please call the roll, Ms. Hedges.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Here.
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Mouskow?
Here.
Commissioner White?
Here.
Chairperson Wyatt?
Here. And if everyone will please stand for the flag salute. Open up public comment period. Is there anyone here today to speak to any items not on our agenda? Have no speaker slips in front of me. Anyone with items or concerns not on the agenda? Seeing no one, we'll close public comment period and move on to planning staff updates. Mr. Hogue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My typical run through the dates for the rest of the year, so make sure that we're all on the same page. For your meetings in the fall and winter. You have your next meeting is on your regular meeting date of October 28th. That's a Thursday. Then in November, it is a little more complicated because of holidays and room availability. So we have a regular meeting on November 4th. That's the first Thursday instead of the second. You have a joint meeting with the board on Tuesday, November 9th, concerning the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Resource Capacity Study. Then your next meeting will be November 19th, and that's a Friday, not a Thursday. Couldn't get the room on Thursday. Then in December, you have one meeting, and that's December 9th. And that's already fully booked with a continued discussion of the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin. The study session on the Shannon Community Plan Update and the study session on the Sun Power California Valley Solar Ranch Project. Then end of the first of the year, you're back to the regular second and fourth Thursdays. And your agendas actually are already pretty full through the mid-February because of the beginning of hearings on the major projects, SunPower, Shannon. So that gives you a little bit of a insight into how to plan your fall and winter, I guess, or around the Planning Commission. So, but hopefully you'll have an ample holiday break. We always try to make sure that that's accommodated. That's really all that I have for staff updates. I'll look to the assistant director or to our principal environmental specialist and see if they have any staff updates. Okay. That's it.
Questions.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hogue. Questions for staff? Any questions? I have just one, Mr. Hogue. Maybe somebody at Ms. Griffin's over there knows. What happened with the Cayucas Del Mar project? Was supposed to go to Coastal Commission about 2 months ago. Did they decide on that? Does anyone in staff in the room know?
Is that the DeSeco project?
Yes, DeSeco.
Anyone out there
know what happened on that? Okay, I've just been curious.
They retained jurisdiction over it, but where it went from there, I'm not really sure. Tim, do you know?
The Coastal Commission hasn't taken it back up yet.
Okay.
So I was just in court on DeSeco about 2 weeks ago, and there's two lawsuits going now. One brought by the Pacific Legal Foundation asserting that the Coastal Commission doesn't have jurisdiction, and another one brought by the neighbors who live adjacent to the project asserting that the board shouldn't have approved the project that it approved there. So the latter lawsuit is sort of trailing, waiting for the Pacific Legal Foundation's lawsuit to move forward. About where it's at now, it's pretty gummed up.
Okay, and so those lawsuits have to carry forward before it can go to the commission then, since one of them is challenging jurisdiction then?
I don't know if the commission would. There's no injunction in place or anything like that, so I don't know if the Coastal Commission will try to deal with it before that gets resolved or not.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any other questions? If there are no questions for staff, we'll move on to our consent agenda then. One item on the consent agenda, conformity report. Any questions or discussion on that agenda item? Okay. Seeing no discussion, do I hear a motion?
Kendall Republic.
Oh, thank you. Public comments on consent. This is consent agenda one. Excuse me, Mr. Wynn, I didn't see. I thought this was item number one and missed the consent agenda part. So good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Wyatt and Commissioners. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm director of the Napomo Community Services District. I'm here today with our district engineer, Mr. Peter Sedgwick, to encourage you to leave this right on the consent agenda and let it slide by smoothly. But we will answer questions if you have any. The tank that's in question will actually be buried. It'll only stand about 4 feet above the ground. It'll be painted a neutral color. We think it'll have very, very little visible impact or anything otherwise. The additional advantage for us, by the way, of burying it partway down is that we won't have to pump the water quite so high when it comes up from Santa Maria. So there's both engineering and aesthetic reasons for doing it this way. Any questions at all? Thank you.
Sign of any, thank you, sir. Another attempt to thwart public comment, yeah. missed. All right, anyone else here to comment on this? So we'll close public comment on this item. And seeing no discussion or questions, then do I hear a motion?
I'll so move the consent agenda.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So with that, our conformity report passes on the consent, and we will move right on to hearing item number one. If the clerk will please tell us what we're doing.
Hearing to consider a request by Coastal Christian School for a land use ordinance amendment. County file number LRP 2008-00011, Supervisorial District 3, Michael Conger, Project Manager.
Good morning, Mr. Conger. Before you start, I'll just ask if there are any ex parte communications to disclose on this item. Okay, seeing nods, none then. Mr. Conger.
Good morning, Chair Wyatt, members of the Commission. Michael Conger, County Planning Staff. This project is a request by the Coastal Christian School to amend a section in our land use ordinance. This is an outline of the presentation. I'll start with an introduction to the project site, give you a little bit of the history and background behind the project. A description of what's being amended in the ordinance, a brief discussion to the hearing process and environmental review process, and then a discussion on water resources, which is the focus of our environmental review on this particular project. A brief discussion on general plan policies and then staff recommendation. So I'll start with an introduction to the project site. The project site is located on the west side of Oak Park Boulevard, about a half mile north of U.S. Highway 101. To the east is the city of Arroyo Grande and a residential development there. To the south is the city of Pismo Beach, and that includes both the residential and office commercial development. And to the north and the west is an undeveloped rural lands parcel, which is known as the Los Robles del Mar site, and there was a specific plan processed with the city of Pismo Beach for residential development on that site. And this is a vicinity map. The project site is outlined in black, and you can see the city of Pismo Beach is shown in green, city of Arroyo Grande in orange. This is the land use category map. The project site is in the rural lands land use category. The two blue lines you see there are urban reserve lines for the city of Pismo Beach and the city of Arroyo Grande. And you can see to the north and the west that Los Robles del Mar site is also designated rural lands. Let's take a look at this. This is the aerial photograph of the project site. Again, you can see the residential development to the south along Skyline Drive in Pismo Beach. And residential development on the east side on Robin Circle in the city of Arroyo Grande. The project site was graded partially in the 1980s as a result of a conditional use permit approval that was done in 1979. And you can see that not much revegetation has occurred on large portions of the site, so that kind of speaks to the soil conditions. They are highly erosive soils and difficult to revegetate. This is a more zoomed out aerial of the project site. Again, you can see the relationship of the project site to the urban development on the south and east and the more rural areas on the north and west. In 1979, the Planning Commission granted a conditional use permit for a kindergarten through 12th grade private school on the project site. As part of that approval, there were conditions of approval that included a condition requiring that the project site obtain water, sewer, police, and fire services from one of the two adjacent cities. This project managed to get a letter from the city of Pismo Beach asserting that they will provide police, sewer, and fire services to the project site, but not water services, and we'll discuss water a little bit more. The conditions of approval also required 242 parking spaces, which is actually overparked in accordance with our ordinance, and more parking spaces than the school would actually require. In 1980, the county did a comprehensive update to the land use ordinance and general plan, and part of that was adoption of the San Luis Bay Area Plan. There was a planning area standard included with the San Luis Bay Area Plan that specifically targeted this site and said that any development of a private school on this site would have to adhere to the 1979 conditions of approval. And those planning area standards were eventually moved from the general plan into the land use ordinance where they are today. In 2003, the Pismo Beach City Council approved a specific plan for the Los Robles del Mar area. That specific plan included both the Los Robles del Mar site that I pointed out earlier and the project site. The City of Pismo Beach prepared a supplemental environmental impact report and certified that environmental impact report. In 2008, the Local Agency Formation Commission, which is the agency that has discretion over annexations, denied annexation of the Los Robles del Mar area to the City of Pismo Beach. That denial was based out of information that came from a second supplemental EIR that LAFCO was the lead agency on. That EIR was prepared but not certified, and it addressed issues with groundwater. The main concern was introduction of a second municipal purveyor to this relatively confined aquifer that the project site overlies. The description of the project being proposed today is deletion of a section in the land use ordinance. It's section 22106020, subsection F2. The result of deletion of this section would mean that Coastal Christian School could use an on-site well for its water supply rather than having to connect with a municipal provider, either the City of Pismo Beach or Arroyo Grande. And additionally, that would also allow the conditional use permit, which is in process and which your planning commission will review separately, it will allow that conditional use permit to establish the conditions of approval. Development of the school, as I mentioned, is being processed separately with another conditional use permit, although the environmental review is combined. And this is an image of the standard that we're looking at deletion of. It states development of the private high school on Oak Park Road east of Highway 101 shall comply with the conditional use permit approved in 1979. Since this is a land use ordinance amendment, the hearing process is a little bit different than the typical projects you review. We started with the Board of Supervisors authorization last year, and we've completed the environmental review process. We're now at the first Planning Commission hearing to consider the land use ordinance. Your commission will make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors will then have the authority to certify the mitigated negative declaration and adopt the ordinance if they so choose. After that stage, we'll be returning to your Planning Commission with a hearing on the conditional use permit, which is the development of the school component. At that time, your commission will have the ability to consider that that mitigated negative declaration, which theoretically would have already been adopted by the Board of Supervisors, and you can determine if you want to rely on that mitigated negative declaration or make modifications in the form of a supplement or an addendum or an amendment. And depending on the circumstances, we would look at recirculation. And then, of course, your authority would be to conditionally approve or deny the conditional use permit at that time. Regarding environmental review, I mentioned that the environmental document, the mitigated negative declaration that was prepared, includes both the land use ordinance amendment and the conditional use permit component. The reason for this is that the whole of a project is required to be considered under the California Environmental Quality Act. The basis behind that is to avoid piecemealing a project, cutting it up into smaller segments, which individually may not have a significant impact, but cumulatively would. This is our ability to consider all impacts associated with the project, and it actually provides more information than you would have if you were considering an environmental document that just looked at the land use ordinance amendment components. You have a better picture of what's going on the site. And again, CEQA requires that the certification of the environmental document occur at the earliest phase in the project, so that would be when the first legislative or quasi-adjudicatory action would be taken. That's the Board of Supervisors' action on the land use ordinance amendment. So that would be when the document gets certified for both components of the project. So the Planning Commission's role is to review the mitigated negative declaration, make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors' role is to review the negative declaration, consider the Planning Commission's comments, and then take action on the environmental determination. And when it returns to your Planning Commission in the form of a conditional use permit, you then have the ability to consider that previously adopted mitigated negative declaration. With regards to water resources, this is the primary issue we focused on in the staff report. Adherence to the planning area standard requires municipal service on the project site, and there are two options for that, the City of Arroyo Grande or the City of Pismo Beach. Right now, the City of Arroyo Grande does not have any extra water to serve outside users. In fact, they're working on getting some of the outside users into other water purveyors. The City of Pismo Beach has a policy that you bring your own water for outside users and for new annexations. So that means that the on-site well would have to be dedicated to the city for municipal use in exchange for the project site getting a municipal water service. And then the third option that we're considering today is use of an on-site well. We did have concerns about this aquifer because it was addressed during the Los Robles del Mar annexation hearings at LAFCO. And so we actually did have a hydrogeologic analysis done for this project site. The hydrogeologic analysis focused on three main topics. The first was demand. How much water does the project actually need? Then there's sustainability. Is there enough long-term water resources to sustain the project in perpetuity? And then finally, interference. Will the project's use of groundwater affect any other groundwater users, such as drop in well levels? The FUGRO study indicated no significant impacts to all three of those. I should start with a little discussion on the aquifer. It's actually a two-layer aquifer. There's a shallow layer and a deep layer. The shallow layer serves most of the Arroyo Grande fringe area, which are the rural residences and the residential suburban and residential rural land use categories, roughly from Old Oak Park Road out to Corbett Canyon. And those are generally 2.5 to 10 acre parcels, individual rural residences. Most of those use the shallow aquifer. The deep aquifer serves Coastal Christian School. The City of Arroyo Grande has two municipal wells tapping from the deep aquifer. And then FUGRO estimates about 21 rural residences would also use the deep aquifer. Between the two layers is something that FUGRO refers to as an aquitard. It's a clay layer that separates the shallow and the deep, and it's relatively impermeable, so there's little communication between the shallow aquifer and the deep aquifer. And this is an image showing more or less where the aquifer boundaries are and where the three wells that I mentioned, the Coastal Christian well and then the two City of Arroyo Grande wells. The shallow aquifer is roughly in this yellow shaded area, and the deep aquifer roughly in this blue shaded area. And you can see Arroyo Grande well number 10 appears to be in the shallow aquifer, but it's deep enough that it actually taps from the deep aquifer. And so this is a cross-section showing the different layers. Again, we have the shallow aquifer at the top. We have the clay layer that separates the two aquifers, and then the deep aquifer in the bottom. All three of those wells, Coastal Christian well and the two City of Arroyo Grande wells, all go to the deep aquifer. The first issue we mentioned was demand. As part of the FUGRO study, they subcontracted with a civil engineering firm, and that civil engineering firm estimated water demand to be between 25 and 29 acre feet per year. When the LAFCO EIR was prepared, they had estimated about 17 acre feet per year, so this is a bit more. The reasonable worst case scenario estimate we're using for the purposes of our environmental analysis is 28.74 acre feet per year, which is based on the dry year conditions. Regarding sustainability, the deep aquifer has a perennial yield of 270 acre feet per year. Currently, the demand is about 115 acre feet per year. Coastal Christian School would add about 29 acre feet, and then FUGRO also projected that Arroyo Grande would do an additional 90 acre feet per year of pumping beyond what they're currently doing. And so that would bring the future demand to 234 acre feet per year. That leaves 36 acre feet per year, or roughly 13% of the total perennial yield left for new uses. Regarding interference, we consider interference to be a significant impact if it affects the actual well, if it requires that a well be drilled deeper, for example, because the water levels are subsiding. The projected impacts from mutual interference, this is considering pumping all three wells more or less continuously for about a 6-month period, and the city of Arroyo Grande well number 9 would drop about 78 feet, well number 10 would drop about 240 feet, and the coastal Christian well would drop about 56 feet. Even with the drawdown, the water levels will still remain above the screen level for all three of those wells, so we don't consider that to be a significant impact. So the conclusions from the water study were that the project will require about 29 acre feet per year, the aquifer can support and sustain that demand, and that interference impacts are not anticipated to be significant. And further, we believe that the use of an on-site well would avoid a potential significant impact if a municipal provider were to be introduced, a second municipal provider were to be introduced to that aquifer, because they wouldn't be limited to that 29 acre feet per year. The only time limitations would apply would be if that aquifer does reach overdraft and adjudication proceedings occur, in which case they would divvy up the water resources. But they're not limited to the 29 acre feet. The city of Arroyo Grande presently pumps about 75 acre feet with plans to pump about 165 acre feet in the future. So we can reasonably assume that a municipal provider would pump a relatively large amount and potentially result in this aquifer reaching overdraft status. Regarding general plan policies, the staff report identified a few areas of potential conflict. One was with the strategic growth principles and policies, and one is with a particular policy about small water companies in the conservation and open space element. Regarding strategic growth, staff had difficulty doing the strategic growth analysis on the project site because it really doesn't have wholly rural characteristics or wholly urban characteristics. As you saw from that aerial, you could see two sides of the project were bounded by urban development, two sides by rural areas. So it's really right on the boundary. The general plan does designate it as rural. It is zoned rural lands, but it has many urban characteristics. First of all, the general plan recognized the development of a school on this site since 1980. The site adjoins two cities and borders urban development. It's located on an arterial road about a half a mile from the county's largest state highway. And the site's within the Pismo Beach's sphere of influence, which means that eventually Pismo Beach has plans to annex this area. And there is an existing school in the city limits of City of Arroyo Grande, and they actually require expansion. So this would be relocating a school and expanding it rather than creating a new school. There are points where the project does generally comply with the strategic growth principles, and that is the fact that the site is located near housing, transit, and services. Within a half mile, we have offices, retail, commercial, and housing. Additionally, it's relatively centrally located for its service population. We anticipate this school, being a private school, will probably draw from a larger regional area, probably most of the South County region, and this location right off of Highway 101 on a major arterial is relatively beneficial for that. Additionally, strategic growth principles say when there's not enough space or ability to accommodate a use in the urban area, then you start looking at the fringe of the urban area for those new uses, and this is right at the cusp of two cities, so it would reasonably be considered a fringe, urban fringe area. Some points where it diverges from strategic growth principles are regarding policies to focus urban level uses within the designated urban areas and preservation of that hard urban edge. And you can see from the aerial that there is indeed a hard urban edge at the city of Pismo Beach city limits. Staff's conclusions were that the site has both urban and rural characteristics. Because of that, we're kind of in a gray area in the strategic growth analysis. But we do believe that the points where the points of confluence appear to outweigh the points of divergence with regards to strategic growth. The next discussion is on policy WR 1.9 in the conservation and open space element. This policy uses the term strongly discourage regarding new water companies located adjacent to existing water companies. So the preference is that, in general, sites have expanded urban services from an existing municipal provider, City of Arroyo Grande or City of Pismo Beach, for example, rather than form a new water company right next to these two existing water companies. We do believe that there is justification to diverge from this particular policy for several reasons, and that's largely because We believe this can avoid a potentially significant environmental impact that I discussed with regards to the city of Pismo Beach, assuming municipal service on the existing on-site well. Additionally, if we were to adhere to Policy 1.9 and require expansion of these urban services, that's a potential conflict with Policy WR 1.1, which seeks to protect existing water resources and try to avoid overdraft conditions in basins. And it's also a potential conflict with Strategic Growth Policy, Principle 1 Policy 7, which states give highest priority to avoiding significant environmental impacts. Overall, the intent of the conservation and open space element is to avoid environmental impacts, particularly to our resources such as water resources. So we believe that divergence from this policy is actually more in favor of what the conservation and open space element and our general plan are getting at. So our conclusions were adherence to Policy WR 1.9 would create a potentially significant environmental impact. The strategic growth policy I referenced earlier states that we need to give highest priority to avoiding those impacts, and so we believe divergence is justified. Staff's recommendation is that your commission make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to certify the mitigated negative declaration and adopt the ordinance repealing Land Use Ordinance Section 22106020, subsection F2. And that concludes staff's presentation. We are available for any questions.
Sir? Questions for staff at this point. Commissioner from the district, want to start us off?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the excellent staff report, Mr. Conger, and for your responses to Commissioner Wyatt's questions and email earlier. However, I think I'm going to make you repeat some of it because I'm still having just a little trouble understanding some of the procedural things. And I understand that. Just make sure I got this right. My understanding is we're really addressing the narrow issue of the land use ordinance section, and that even though we're certifying the mitigated neg deck, that we actually are going to have a chance to look at it again or require more. So just kind of go over that one more time.
The Planning Commission actually has two chances to influence the environmental determination. The first would be today as part of your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors for their certification. When the subsequent conditional use permit comes before your commission, there will also be an environmental determination, and staff's recommendation on that environmental determination will probably be consider and rely upon the adopted mitigated negative declaration. If you don't feel that that's sufficient, if you feel that there's an impact that wasn't discussed or mitigation measures were insufficient, there would be ability to make an amendment to that document as part of that conditional use permit hearing process.
And that would be then and also today? Or
you have the chance to provide, as part of your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, any pertinent comments you have. For example, if there's an impact that we failed to consider or a mitigation measure that's insufficient, that would go in as part of your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors would then consider those modifications. Your second opportunity would be after the mitigated negative declaration has already been certified by the Board, and we'd have to do that probably in the form of like a supplement to the mitigated negative declaration, and that may or may not require recirculation of the mitigated negative declaration depending on what thresholds are crossed.
Okay. All right, good. Thank you. That's all I'm going to ask right now. Thanks.
Okay, are there other questions for staff at this point?
Yes.
Sure. Okay, Commissioner O'Grady.
Good morning, Mr. Carr. With respect to appears to be the salient water issue, on page 1-3 of the staff report, last paragraph, you say it appears that the city of Arroyo Grande would be unable and unlikely to supply the project's site with its estimated demand of 29 acre-feet per year. But then up above you say the school plans to draw water from the deep aquifer. Arroyo Grande already has a well from that deep aquifer, so if the school can get the water, I don't understand why the city of Arroyo Grande can't get it from the same place.
Well, the Fugro study did mention, the hydrogeologist who prepared the study spoke with the public works director at the city of Arroyo Grande, and they do have plans to do additional pumping from that aquifer. Right now they're pumping 75 acre feet. They want to do an additional 90 acre feet to bring that up to 165. So the city does have plans to use that water for its existing customers. As of the last water report I had seen on the city of Rio Grande, they were using about 99% of their water sources. And I had heard from someone from the local agency formation commission that there was negotiation about actually taking some of the outside users near the Oceano area and moving them into the Oceano Community Services District because the city was concerned about its water supply. And they did actually enter into an emergency agreement with the Community Services District for some of the, I believe it was some of the Lopez water entitlements, just in case they exceeded their capacity. But as I mentioned, the plan is that water is going to be used for existing City of Rio Grande customers.
But whether the water is delivered to the site by the City of Rio Grande or by the school, it's the same amount of water that's coming out of the aquifer, isn't that right?
And there's a possibility that they could look into doing that. First of all, it would require an action by the local agency formation commission to move the project site from Pismo Beach's sphere of influence into Arroyo Grande's sphere of influence, which it actually was originally when it was approved in 1979.
Yes.
But I suppose they could look into that, but my understanding is that the city of Arroyo Grande is pretty steadfast in not serving outside users at this time.
Okay. With respect to the existing conditions that were adopted in 1979, I guess, that are included on page 1-13, Exhibit C, if Section 22 of the Land Use Ordinance is deleted as you're proposing, what happens to those conditions?
Well, since the conditional use permit expired in the 80s, these conditions would no longer be meaningful. We would prepare separate conditions of approval as part of the current conditional use permit project.
Okay, so there's no effect at all then.
No.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, Commissioner White, have some questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Conger, for an excellent report as usual. And seems more often than not, Commissioner O'Grady and I go down the same trail here, so that's quite all right. And my questions are all regarding the conflict in your report. When we talked about, I think you said Pismo Beach says bring your own water, and AG said there's no more water. And then later on in the report you said AG plans on drawing 90 more acre feet. So currently we have the 90 acre feet estimated in the basin, along with the 29 acre feet that's not yet drawn yet from this site, and after those two are gone, there should be a 36 acre feet in reserve. So I think the only question that you didn't answer that I had that Mr. O'Grady went down with you is the fact that if it's a dedicated well to the Pismo Beach, that there's no limitations on what can be drawn from site. And I understand the overlying.
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office, and as I understand your question, Commissioner White, you're asking whether or not if you approve this project and allow it to be established, you're going to have some means by which you can regulate how much groundwater is pumped and used on the project site.
Well, I think the question I'm asking is if we try to maintain our WR 1.9 in the conservation open space element, we try to hang on to that, and we require a dedication of this well to Pismo Beach. Do we have the ability to maximize the amount of water by conditioning this project that Pismo Beach could draw from that?
I don't think that there's the current proposal before you anticipates dedicating the well to Pismo Beach, is that's correct? So that would have to be something that would need to be further evaluated before we could proceed with a requirement like that. I mean, as the staff presentation pointed out, having the project served by Pismo Beach would require, you know, a further action by LAFCO. There would need to be an environmental analysis of that as well. So I think we're quite a few steps away from where we would be in that situation. I think your ability to control how much water is pumped and used here, though, is something that you probably can initially try to control through, you know,
planning area standards that would attempt to regulate the type of landscaping, the type of fixtures, the other things that would control the amount of water use on the site. So I think at this point, there probably are things that you could do if you were inclined to grant the amendment that's sought here that would regulate the amount of water being used there, but I don't think you could do what's being sought today and rely on the fact that somehow some future action would cause this to be served by the city of Pismo Beach.
Well, Madam Chair, may I interject a moment? And this is sort of deja vu all over again, because I'm going to say the same thing I said on Jack's Helping Hand. There's a subsequent CUP that will follow, conditional use permit. And if your commission feels that controls over landscaping, irrigation, and other kinds of water use, that can be dealt with in the conditional use permit as conditions of approval. It doesn't necessarily have to be handled through a planning area standard. So, again, my apologies to council, but I feel like that's the more proper vehicle for dealing with that level of issue.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Hoke.
Well,
but I think the question is more the policy question that Mr. White raises. What we're doing today, if there isn't some option because of our potential conflict here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that clarification. Yes, I guess the question I'm trying to ask, if we've thoroughly exhausted maintaining our existing policies by having this well dedicated to the city of Pismo to serve this site, it appears to me if we had the ability to cap that, if it's not just unlimited use, I understand the definition of beneficial use, and because under this interpretation that's being presented to us, theoretically we could, an overlying user could tap a well, pipe the water around their neighbors and say, well, it's beneficial use to other folks. But I tend to just instinctively believe that beneficial use is to that specific property. So what I'm driving at is if this well could be dedicated to Pismo Beach, Pismo could serve the property that's estimated 29 acre feet at build out. If we could have an agreement, maybe it's not a condition, maybe an agreement with Pismo Beach that they wouldn't exceed twice that capacity of pumping of that well in any given year. And that way we would still remain under the 36 acre feet that's in reserve.
And we did consider an option where we would have that as a mitigation measure, for example, limiting Pismo Beach's ability to pump. However, I don't know that would be considered a feasible mitigation under CEQA, because I don't know that we have the ability to monitor that. The fact is, having an on-site well serve the project site would be more or less mitigation by design, because the only amount of water that they're going to be drawing is the amount of water that they need for their use. And we don't have that assurance if it's part of a municipal system, and so that's part of the concern.
Yes, thank you. I thoroughly understand your presentation. My concern is the conflict, as Chair Wyatt pointed out, between our policies and accepting this as it's presented to us here. So I don't know the water law, and we're all looking forward to a better study on water law, I believe. But maybe even if we didn't have the ability, even if within the law we don't have the ability to limit what Pismo Beach can pump, there may be a way that the Coastal Christian School could make an agreement with.
At this point, so we can hear from the applicant and the public, and then we'll come back to more deliberation. You're on it, but let's hold off on the discussion.
Okay.
Are there more specific questions?
Yes, I may have. I kind of lost my train of thought here, because this seems to be the heart of the question, but. I think the only other one I had was just a technical question. If the city of Pismo supplies sewer service and it is utilized by the on-site well, is I assume there would be a meter required on the well are the rates for Pismo sewer based on water usage?
I'm not certain how the rate structure works on the sewer system.
But would this would you anticipate a meter being on this well so that there is some monitoring, irregardless if it's required by Pismo for the sewer?
I don't know that we would require it as the county. I'm not certain if it would be required as part of the state regulations for establishing a small water company. So I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, thank you. That's it for now.
Okay. Other questions, Commissioner Melskin?
No.
Any questions at this point?
You've already been
asked. Okay. So from my list, a couple more just general water questions. Timing.
questions, Mr. Conger, again on water. A little more elaboration, please, on the significance trigger for the drawdown. I generally understand your description that, as proposed, this wouldn't be significant because it stays to the top of the screen level, but it looks to me like the well levels would come down 76 feet, as much as 76 feet, which seems to me pretty significant. But will you just help me understand that distinction a little better? The top of the screen level is something I don't understand.
Well, the screened depth is where the water is actually being drawn in the well. And so there's usually a top of screen level and a bottom of the screen level. And in all cases, even with the drawdown, the water level would still remain above the top of the screen level. So the screen would still be fully filled with water at that point.
So what it means is it's not significant because nobody would have to drill deeper or do anything deeper in any of those wells.
That's correct. And the simulation that Fugro provided is a reasonable worst-case scenario, assuming, I believe, it's continuous 18-hour pumping, 6-hour recharge for a 6-month period on all three of the wells simultaneously.
Okay, and then how much of a buffer would that provide? We see something like a 13% buffer from, you know, from overdraft or something, but how much of a buffer then would there be in the screen level? It's still above screen level, but by a foot or 2 feet or some great number of feet?
One of the wells, it was very close to the top of the screen level. I believe it was either well number 9 or well number 10 from the city of Arroyo Grande. It was less than a foot above the top of the screen level.
Okay, so there wouldn't be much of a buffer then.
On the other two, I think they had a pretty good size buffer, but it was one of the wells had less than a foot of a buffer.
Okay, so at least in one of those wells, you could say it's relatively close then.
But again, the numbers are coming from a reasonable
worst case scenario. Understood, but could be the case there. Okay, and then the following up on that kind of reserve buffer, you came up with a sort of 13% reserve, and as I recall, somewhere in the staff report, we had something like a 7 or 9% reserve. I'm not sure if that's changed a little bit, but do we have some sort of standard? We talked about this a little in the Paso overdraft study, the question of whether we're at sort of overdraft there, or what level and how much of a buffer we should have. To what point we can assume we can calculate the numbers so that we use everything there, and at what point we need to calculate in some kind of safety buffer. And this question was raised in that hearing, and I don't think we had an answer, but I think it's a very important question because we sort of calculate these scenarios and worst cases, but we know reality tends to be a little different than we think. So is there some sort of standard safety buffer that the industry looks at or water people know of?
I'm not aware of that. The way we evaluate our water resources is through our annual resource summary report, and a level of severity is assigned to some of the basins. This basin is not one of the ones that gets its own level of severity, but the level of severity is determined based on how many years we're away we are from overdraft as far as our projections go. And I don't believe that level of analysis was done on this particular basin because it is a relatively confined basin. There's not a whole lot of growth anticipated here. We have the two Arroyo Grande wells. We have about 21 residences in the school. And Los Robles del Mar annexation was denied, so we don't anticipate that a housing development would also be tapping from this aquifer. So we don't know when it's going to reach overdraft, but based on the projected growth, based on the information that Fugro collected, including Arroyo Grande's projections,
when some extra units and extra demand into some different straws. And
however, my understanding is, as part of the arrangement, the settlement, as part of that, there were several lawsuits that went back and forth after the denial, and my understanding as part of the settlement is that they're going to seek another water source.
Some other water source.
And if they do need to tap from the groundwater in this area, that would have to be analyzed through some form of environmental review with LAFCO acting as the lead agency.
Okay, it just throws in the potential for another user.
Yes, however, from our perspective, since they were denied annexation in 2008, we didn't consider it a pipeline project. They don't have their final entitlement to do development on that site.
Okay, just in a longer range possibility, it's there. Okay. Any other questions raised at this point? Commissioner O'Grady?
On staff report page 1-9, it says this well will serve a population of more than 50 persons, and therefore the well will be established as a state-regulated small water company. So I guess my question is, if it's a state-regulated water company, what is our ability to condition anything with respect to how much water is used by this water company, or how can we limit the area served by the water company to just this site?
I believe we have that discretion as part of the CEQA review process and as part of the discretionary approval process.
Both things, the volume of water as well as the area served?
I'm not certain on that. I don't know if a small water company could expand. The only reason a small water company needs to be formed is because of the number of users. Under normal circumstances, if this were just a single-family residence, for example, this would just be a private well. It would require a permit from Environmental Health. There would be no state involvement. State involvement really comes with water quality monitoring and things of that nature. I don't know if the state directly regulates expansion of service areas for small water companies. I know the Public Utilities Commission does for the larger water companies, but I don't know what the nature of the state's regulation is with regards to pumping volumes and boundaries.
Thank you, Chair Wyatt. Bill Robeson, County Planning. From our experience, the state really doesn't regulate the amount of water that's being taken. It usually regulates the quality, so that's what their focus is upon. So it still gives your commission the ability to condition the project about how much water and where the water goes.
But again, that wouldn't be necessarily monitoring actual use. That would be later in the actual project application.
Correct.
What's allowed to be built. So there's a distinction there.
Yeah, that's sort of the tricky part of the process that we have that doesn't bring the CUP to the decision maker along with the proposed change to the land use ordinance that's necessary in order to accomplish it. And technically, you're making findings based on the amendment of the land use ordinance alone. So, I mean, I know that the staff may disagree about this, but in order to satisfy yourself that you've impose the mitigation measures that are necessary under CEQA to reach the conclusions that you're being asked to reach, you may have to create some sort of planning area standards that adjust that. And it does junk up the planning documents, but there's no other way to do it. And you can't say with a straight face that you know that when the CUP comes 3 months from now or next week or whenever it is that you're going to impose conditions that will solve all these problems, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Madam Chair, if I might once again interject and do a bit of an about-face. I think there is a way to do a planning area standard that's more streamlining of the junk. And what it does is sets the table for the conditional use permit and gives clear authority. There's something like water conservation measures, both indoors and outdoors, shall be maximized to the greatest extent feasible. Conditions shall be applied at the time of the land use permit approval to address water conservation. So what it does is it sets up a path without actually getting into the nitty-gritty of the details. And if your commission wanted to consider a planning area standard like that, that's an approach that staff would recommend.
And I will also mention that we do have a proposed mitigation measure on page 1-77. It's mitigation measure number W1, and it would require recordation of an agreement to memorialize that the water resources need to remain on site, so they would not be able to serve another user with that on site well.
So that much is in there.
So that's even with a water company. Is that?
That's correct.
And state regulation that wouldn't conflict.
We believe we still have the authority to do this through CEQA.
Okay. And one of the other options was to allow Pismo to serve the site. But and I think Commissioner White was speaking about that. And so I'm just
it's a little
trying to understand
the scenario, since that's a private water company and these are two public water purveyors that are adjacent.
Okay, thank you.
And so at that point, Commissioner Grady, I guess I'll just bring it back to us in the question at hand today to make sure we're kind of clear, and if the applicant and people from the public are here to speak to this, that the question before us today is whether we want to amend this LUO text. So it's the question on water today, and the text now requires the project to get a municipal supplier. So that's the current requirement. So the question before us today is whether we want to amend that and take that requirement out. So I hope questions have been answered well enough then. Mr. Nall is here and answered questions, and Mr. Conger has on our allowance, our ability to relook at the environmental document when we see the project more clearly later on down the line. So are we all clear on that at this point? Okay. Are questions satisfied? There's some question about how we go about this sort of on faith, but maybe we can add to the findings or conditions if we want to proceed. So I just want to make sure we're kind of clear on our path before us, that we're not going to open up the whole project when we don't have site plans or elevations or enough information in front of us to do that. Okay, so I'm seeing general kind of nods then. So we'll figure out how to go about that then after we hear from the public. So if there are no more specific questions at this point, I'll open it up to the applicant, if the applicant is here with a presentation for us today, or just to answer questions. Someone's here. Good morning. If you will, fill out a speaker slip so we've got your name down for the record after you speak. But how much time would you like?
I'll work on the 3 minutes.
Okay, and we usually allow the applicant 10 or 15, so if you need a little more, take the time you need.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is John Mack, architect for the project. This has been ongoing since 2007. And thank you for today and being able to listen to the first of a long process. With regards to water, we understand that our well water is going to be exclusive use, and I was going to also point out the W-1.C on page I-77, that's going to be exclusive for CCS and for the use of CCS. When we get into the project, you know, what doesn't take in consideration here, and you will have that chance, I'm so excited because we're going to get back to this site that's, you know, well scarred to date. We're going to have bioswells, we're going to have recharge systems, and all those factors that don't come in and play into the calculations before you. But, you know, you'll have that opportunity later in your review of the CUP. I'd like to let you know that we did meet with both city municipalities, both Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach. First, Arroyo Grande, we met with them, hence the letter came back from Rob Strong. We redesigned the project, addressed their goals. We met back with the city, provided all the information, and to the best of our knowledge, we met all their concerns because we didn't get any response back or letters back. I'd like to let you know that, and I believe it was said already, we're not under the sphere of influence of Arroyo Grande. We're Pismo Beach. Arroyo Grande basically said, no, we can't provide you water. That's against our policy. City Council will not go for it. When we met with Pismo Beach, who we were under the sphere of influence, basically we went through the process and they said, yes, John, we'll serve you with sewer. We will, you know, do the fire services, the police services, all that. But we cannot provide you with water. And when we went and showed them documentation of the well, they said, no, we cannot take that well. We have a pending lawsuit with Los Robles del Mar. Basically, we've asked again and again and again, and the answer has been no. I think the proposal that you have before you actually is better for the groundwater table. I wanted to say it in different terms. When CCS goes online and starts producing from the well, we're at 3.4, 4.8 acre feet of water demand for phase one. It's not until build out of the last phase that we're going to start incurring that 28 acre feet. But if you gave that well today to Pismo Beach, they would pull that full 28 acre feet. So what is better for the ground table? Probably best to keep it with CCS. And that'll be a low draw. And the other thing it doesn't show is all our well, you'll see, there's a couple things, thoughts. The biggest water demand is landscaping. So we have the control over landscaping and reviewing the landscape plan and how we're addressing landscaping. And the biggest component of the landscaping is into the very last phase, which you see the water draw double when we put in the ball field. So, and that's the very last phase, and we can look at all the different ways we can do that, and I think you're going to have another stab at it and really bring those concerns about water to a manageable level that you can control.
And oversee me so easily. I am Mike Wynn, and among other things that I do, I chair the Water Resource Advisory Committee for the county, and we have not considered this plan yet, and we have not looked specifically at this portion of the RMS, although we probably will do that toward the end of this year. This is a long-standing private school in South County. It's an excellent school. They are contiguous to urban growth on two sides, and the other sides, frankly, have little to no agricultural potential. So I don't think it's a stretch to approve it on those grounds. But I do want to encourage you to go ahead and revoke the section of the land use ordinance that should be done. And let me see if I can explain why. We've been following this for some time. The city of Rio Grande simply is not interested in annexing this and supporting it. And they have every right to make that decision. And it's really out of your hands. It's out of everybody else's hands as well. But I noticed that Commissioner White's concern that maybe it should belong to Pismo Beach. And there's very strong reasons why LAFCO said no to that. If you follow the LAFCO hearings in 2008, the problem was that Pismo Beach was there, very supportive, answered all the questions. Rio Grande had a couple people there who said nothing. They just sat and listened. Finally, they were asked if they would give assurances that they would not draw down more than a certain amount of water and thus totally deplete that supply. And they simply said they would not give those assurances. That if the city of Rio Grande needed the water, they would take it. Perfectly ordinary, perfectly understandable. Not great news, however, for the school. If you looked at those wells, the well from the school is the shallowest of the three in that particular aquifer. So if AG wells 9 and 10 start drawing that down, Coastal Christian will go dry before they do. Just the way the aquifer works there. Probably not annexing into Pismo Beach would be the best thing for them, because by being a mutual water company, they would preserve superior rights to those of the purveyor, which is Rio Grande. So they would be able to enforce their right to continue drawing water if the Rio Grande demand pulled the aquifer down below their screens. So that really is their best hope to have a sustainable water supply. Had Pismo Beach done it, Rio Grande could have pulled the water down. They'd been out. And, of course, the people of Pismo Beach would have had to supply the water anyway, which, by the way, they really wanted. They even wanted the return flows from the sewer, pump them over the hill and down into their plant. They were quite interested. But I think this is the best plan that's available. I hope you'll support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Any other speakers on this item? Seeing none, hearing quiet, would the applicant like to add any further comments then in closing? Okay, no. Okay, so we'll close public comment and bring it back to staff. Any comments from staff?
No further comments from me.
No further comments from staff either. Okay, so we will bring it back to the commission then and get going on the discussion. So I see Commissioner Christensen is ready.
I am ready.
Okay.
I was slow to warm up today, but I'm ready to go now. I basically agree completely with staff's analysis that changing this land use ordinance, deleting it from the land use ordinance section is the best way to preserve groundwater and is the most the best way to follow CEQA and preserve the groundwater here. My concerns have been with certifying the mitigated neg deck and without an actual project in front of us, as our council has pointed out. That's why I was trying to make sure we have an understanding of what it is we're doing next after this step, which I see as a very limited step. So just to kind of see where my commission is, my what I would like to do is, you know, is to go ahead and recommend that we do approve the text amendment. But my only question to the commission is whether or not in adopting the mitigated neg deck, if we want to follow Mr. Hoag's suggestion to add ourselves a little extra protection, put some kind of planning area standard in there now that specifically addresses our ability to deal with water conservation issues when we do see the CUP, as it's been mentioned, you know, dealing with landscaping, fixtures, sports fields, how much, where it goes, that kind of thing later on. I agree we do not need to do that now. We should not do that now, but do we want to
begin at the appropriate time, and then you can take a close look at that and see if it needs to be refined or not.
Okay, comfort level. So we have a question before us. So other commissioners want to weigh in on that? Comfortable with that? I'm comfortable with it. Yes, so seeing nods, we're comfortable with going in that direction.
Yes, at this point, I'm satisfied that every effort was taken to contact the municipal providers, and it's just a dead end. And I appreciate Mr. Wynn's comments on how the school can best secure their overlying rides. So I'm comfortable with it also.
Okay, general comfort level then I'm seeing. So am I seeing nods to that generally? Not just that specific question, but general comfort level going in this direction. Okay, well, then as am I.
Can I still ask a question, however, before
sure.
we get to the motion stage? what happens if this land is sold by Community Christian? Will it have any impact? In other words, say 20 years from now, it becomes, they sell the land for some other use perhaps. What are the implications at that point?
Depending on the use, it may or may not require either a land use permit or a subdivision or a land use ordinance amendment. And in any case, it'll involve some form of environmental determination. Any form of discretionary review would require an environmental determination, and we would consider the water impacts and implications at that time as part of.
But the conditions we might adopt next time would still apply, then, would they not?
You're talking about on the conditional use permit.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the whole process and trying to look down the road to be sure that what we do here has some duration to it.
Well, first of all, I do want to point out that the planning area standard, as it's worded right now, applies only to a private school on this site. So any other use would not be subject to those 1979 conditions of approval and those limitations.
Right.
And so any other use would still have to go through the appropriate process to establish itself, and if that involves an environmental determination, we'd have to consider what that means in terms of water.
If I might interject once again, I seem to recall, and possibly the applicant's representatives can confirm this, but I think the original gifting of the property to the Coastal Christian folks indicated that it was only to be used for that purpose and that the property would revert back to the original person that made the gift. So that's another factor to consider if you're thinking, what if they decide they want to get out of the school business and go into the shopping center business or something like that? Michael's answer is correct. You know, a change in use would be subject to whatever rules are in place at the time and be reviewed based on its own circumstances. So, but I seem to recall that there was this reversion clause, and if you want to know more about that, possibly the applicants can answer that question.
I was mainly concerned about the water, and if we were talking about putting conditions that would try to limit, mitigate the use of water, and I was just wanting some reassurance that those would persist even if the property was sold.
Well, the change in use would require its own process and provide that opportunity to look at that.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so sounds like we're all comfortable with going in this direction, adding the planning area standard. I'm also comfortable with it, understanding the dilemma here, the terminology, and I just don't see this a better way. What I would like to suggest is hope that we can tighten up our findings to explain why we're doing this, in addition to adding the new conservation language in the planning area standard. So So I have some suggestions for findings if other commissioners are amenable to some of that. Are there other questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Prior to getting that, I just had a general question that we touched on earlier about buffering. What kind of how we're buffering on these water balance estimates. And if we refer to page 1-93 of our staff report, which is part of the FUGRO report, it's got both the water balance numbers here on 7.1.4 under deep percolation of septic systems. And I notice they use the water duty factor of 1 acre-feet a year for the residentials in the area. I think there's approximately 20 of them. And we keep seeing these conflicting use numbers for residential use. I believe in the Pastoral's groundwater study, the estimate was 1.75 acre-feet a year. And then if we go to the septic recharge, they apply a 50% recharge in this situation, whereas in the Pastoral's groundwater study, I believe it was a 30%. And I do understand that, you know, recharge, you know, soil conditions can have an effect on that, but the Pastoral's groundwater basin.
Yeah. So I heard Mr. Hoag had some words. Did you want to go there?
Well, what I heard Mr. Hoag say was, first of all, make a recommendation, then we can make a separate motion regarding planning area standard guidance to the board. So first, I want to go ahead and do the mitigate neg deck, the taking out of this land use ordinance language, and then we can talk about the next thing.
So you want two separate motions? Is how you're looking at going here?
That's what I heard. That is a good way to go, and that's the way I'll take it, since I'm not going to be inventive at this moment.
Okay.
So, and I heard you say that you don't like the findings here. What's wrong with the findings?
Nothing's wrong with the findings. I was just hoping we can tighten them up a bit to explain the many reasons why we're doing this. Because of the water questions we have, I think we can explain what we're doing a little bit more clearly in the findings. If we look at finding B, some question about the clarity of what we're saying there. If we could pull, can we pull that up on the screen, Mr. Conger? Finding B, right now, the proposed amendments are consistent because the site is in the rural lands category and changes will allow it to be served by on-site well. I'm not sure exactly if this is saying what we want.
But wait, you get down to section F, doesn't that say exactly what we're doing it?
Okay, yeah, it kind of does, but there are a couple things I'd like to add because I'd like to make it very clear why we're doing this despite potential conflicts with COAST WR 1.9 and strategic growth. So I think we could add a few things in here to just tighten it up.
Commissioner White, I do have some additional finding language that I could show you if you'd be interested in that.
Good, yes, because I suspect we've already gone to the same place. But so starting with finding B, I think what we're trying to say is these are consistent because this is an allowed use in the rural lands category, and this land use element change will allow it to be adequately served. Am I wrong on that? Are we trying to say something I don't get? Right now, I don't think B is saying anything. It's there, but it is meaningless.
I actually think that should say that it's an allowed use in the rural lands category.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for, and think that's what we want to say. This is an allowed use in the rural lands category, and the proposed amendment will allow it to be adequately served with water from an on-site well or something like that. I believe that's what we mean here, but we're not quite at. Am I correct? Is that getting a little closer to what we want? Okay. Comfortable with that?
Yes.
Everyone?
I think that's very good.
Okay.
Madam Chair, you might want to look at the new findings that Michael developed to see if they address your concern.
Yeah, I did write a few additional findings just in case on strategic growth and the policy WR 1.9.
Mr. Conger, that's so, what I was just exactly where I was going
I'll
to.
I'll read these out loud. New finding G would be, while the proposed project site is designated as rural in the general plan, it exhibits many urban characteristics. The location of a school on the project site is consistent with the strategic growth policies and principles for the following reasons.
Mr. Conger, I love it when you've already gone on exactly where I was going. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your advanced question. One, the project site is shares the boundary with two cities, Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach. Two would be the project site is located in Pismo Beach's sphere of influence as designated by the Local Agency Formation Commission. This indicates the site will eventually be annexed by the city of Pismo Beach. The project site is located within one half mile of housing, offices, and retail businesses. Number four would be the project site is located on an arterial road approximately one half mile away from U.S. Highway 101. And five, the school site is centrally located for its service population. And then a second new finding would be finding H regarding policy WR 1.9. And that says, while the conservation and open space element policy WR 1.9 strongly discourages establishment of new small water companies adjacent to existing municipal providers, allowing Coastal Christian School to establish its own water system is favorable to requiring extension of service from a municipal provider for the following reasons. One, the city of Arroyo Grande does not have sufficient water resources to serve new outside users. Two, if the city of Pismo Beach were to provide water service to the on-site well would be dedicated as part of the municipal water supply system. This would introduce a second municipal water purveyor to the deep aquifer, potentially resulting in overdraft. Three, allowing Coastal Christian School to establish its own water system using an on-site well as its source will ensure that the amount of water extracted is equal to the school's own demand. This would ensure that the deep aquifer remains in balance, thereby avoiding a significant impact to water resources. And for strategic growth, Principle 1, Policy 7 states that highest consideration should be given to
amendment. Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's what I needed, just looking at the amendment.
I had the same concern, and then I realized these findings are towards that land use section.
Okay, thank you. That helps me. That gets me out of it, because I was looking at that as a project-level change, and I couldn't conscientiously make that finding. So thank you. Then the only other addition, unless it's in here and I'm missing it somewhere, I think an important part of this picture is that this use has been anticipated by the general plan since 1980. Do we have that somewhere in these findings? Because I think that's an important piece of why we're allowing this, is that this is a use that is anticipated now for three decades. And I would look at this somewhat differently
C to be more specific?
I don't know where to put it, so I'll take recommendation.
Actually, I think you'd probably add a few words to B and make that work.
So B or C, I didn't have a place in mind for that, but I'd really like that to be in there because it's an integral piece of why we're all going along with this otherwise maybe questionable draw.
So the revised B would read, the proposed amendments are consistent with the land use element and other adopted elements of the general plan because this is an allowed use in the rural lands category. The general plan has anticipated development of a school on the project site since 1980, and the proposed amendment would allow the project to be adequately served with water from an on-site well.
Good. I'm happy with that. Others? Nodding? That works? Okay, because I think that was just a very important piece of why we're doing this. So that, let me just scroll down and make sure nothing's hanging off that list.
You're doing that, I have one concern with one of the added conditions that talked about the likelihood of annexation that conflicts with a statement on page 1-3, which says limited water resources and issues concerning municipal service ultimately led to LAFCO's decision to deny the annexation. So I think we can't make that finding.
The denial of the annexation was based on a very specific proposal. The fact that this area is designated in the sphere of influence by the Local Agency Formation Commission is an indication that this is going to be eventually annexed. That's the point of having a sphere of influence boundaries.
Well,
and from what I've heard from LAFCO, there's a likelihood that that there may be another annexation attempt for the site.
So if LAFCO approves the annexation, what are the implications as far as Pismo's ability to put a well into that aquifer?
That would have to be analyzed by LAFCO when they have an application in front of them. What happened with the original Los Robles del Mar annexation proposal is they took what the city of Pismo Beach approved, which did not mention using groundwater resources, And they looked at that and said, well, this EIR is inadequate. We have to do a new environmental impact report because they're going to be tapping from this aquifer. And so that triggered another level of environmental review, and the same thing would occur again if another annexation proposal came forward proposing to use groundwater. If they had another water source, such as state water allocations or Lopez water allocations, then that would not necessarily occur. They would not necessarily have to do another environmental review. They may be able to consider and rely upon the one that the city of Pismo Beach had approved, because there's no change in the water discussion.
Okay, I this is a finding we're making for this particular action. With respect to the text amendment, and I don't see how that statement supports it. In fact, to me, it conflicts. But I don't know what else.
My understanding is that LAFCO would look at the annexation differently the next time around because it's talking about this specific site, not the Paso Robles, whatever it is. And this specific site has a water source. We're giving it a water source. So in that case, the reasons that they denied the annexation of the other area before are not existent in this one, and so it would be likely to be annexed because it is within the sphere of influence, and Pismo would be sort of providing sewer, garbage, blah, 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 blah. So it's kind of, my understanding is that this G2 is referring to a different annexation considerations than the annexation considerations discussed in the staff report.
Well, I hope so. I don't see that it's limited like that, but I just wanted to suggest that as a concern. But
well, Commissioner O'Grady, I think I see your point. Maybe could we just change that language slightly to alleviate the concern? If on this indicates that the site will to this site could, or I think that would be clearer. And you're right. We don't know. Will seems a little strong, so could would make more sense. Well, it is a challenge, and we're all facing to sort out just this text amendment from some sort of later.
I mean, page 1-3, there's an extensive history of the study on the project site, largely stemming from an unsuccessful annexation attempt on the site. So I don't, to me, it's relevant, and
Madam Chair, if I might offer
sure, help us,
some
please.
Guidance.
Yes.
The purpose for finding G is to indicate that despite the strategic growth principles that talk about keeping urban uses in urban areas, there are these extenuating circumstances. And it's a statement of fact that the project is within a LAFCO-adopted sphere of influence. And I think it's proper to note that. I think it's also proper to note that there are certain levels of services that urban services that will be provided to the site. What I don't think is actually relevant to this statement of making a case of being an extenuating circumstance in relation to our strategic growth policies is that there was a prior annexation that was denied because it was totally different circumstances. It included a much larger scope of issues because it included a larger scope of development. It's possible that if this, just the school site alone, had come forward for annexation back in 2003, that it might have not met with as much resistance, but that's speculation on my part. I think with the additions that were just suggested to Section 2 of Finding G, I think that achieves the purpose. What we're trying to do is say, this is why this is a special case of being an urban scale use outside an urban reserve line. And the fact that it's within a sphere of influence boundary, I think, is an extenuating circumstance.
Is relevant. Okay, so Commissioner O'Grady, does that help?
Yeah, I see the context is strategic growth, so that makes sense to me.
Okay, so are there other proposed changes or additions then to this finding language as read by staff here and we see on the screen? Are commissioners comfortable with all of this new language then? Do we need to scroll through that to read it again, or everyone comfortable with it? Okay, seeing nods, comfort level then. Take that as a yes. So, Commissioner Christensen, did you want to make a motion then on this first part?
Sure. I'll go ahead and move that the Commission, recommend to the Board of Supervisors the adoption of the mitigated NEG DEC in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA, Section 21000 FSEC, and that we approval of the of a text amendment to delete Section 22.106.020F.2 of the Land Use Ordinance LRP 2008-00011, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A as modified in our discussion and read into the record today.
Second that.
Okay. Motion made and seconded. Any further discussion? Okay. The clerk will please call that vote.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Milskow?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Chairperson Wyatt?
Yes. Okay, now do we want to go ahead and make, I guess we, it's a motion for guidance to the Board of Supervisors regarding a planning area standard, is that the idea?
Yeah, well you can consider including that as an additional recommendation to the Board. And I gave that slip of paper to Michael to put on the screen, and so maybe he can pull that up for you. And what it would do is it would go in the place of the existing planning area standard that you just recommended be deleted. And
they could
yeah, I was trying to read it, but I didn't have my magnifying glass.
I can read it.
There you go. I'll let Michael take it from here.
Okay, so this would be modifying Section 1 in the actual ordinance. Instead of saying that that the section of the land use ordinance is being repealed, we'll change that to repealed and replaced with the following. The new language would be Oak Park Road, proposed private school. Development of the private school on Oak Park Road east of Highway 101, Parcel C of CO 78-249, shall include water conservation measures both indoors and outdoors. Water conservation measures shall be maximized to the greatest extent feasible. Conditions shall be applied at the time of the land use permit approval to address water conservation.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and make
either intent.
I'm going to make a motion that we can discuss. Okay, so I'm going to move that the deleted section 22.106.020F2 be replaced with the language as read into the record regarding water conservation. I'm not sure if I just said that. Right.
One question on that. The previous
someday, it, by some miracle, it becomes part of a municipal system.
I know, but we are a little vague in our Title 24. I mean, we do require water conservation to a large degree anyway. So much as we feel good about this, we're a little vague. In reality, water conservation measures shall be maximized
for the land use permit
to the extent feasible. We're not utterly specific here. Okay.
That's what you get to in the land use approval.
Yeah, okay.
Land use permit approval.
I'm going to leave it alone here, yeah. Okay, so we have a motion, and did we have a second on that motion? I'm not quite positive. On the second part of our motion, was there a second? I think we jumped in on discussion before we had an actual second. So would someone second that? Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? Seeing none, if the clerk will please call the roll on that second part of the motion.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Milskow?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Chairperson Wyatt?
Yes. So with that, we have the unanimous approval then of...
I just wanted to thank Mr. Conger again for a really good job.
Yeah, great. Absolutely.
A very confusing issue.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, that could have been much messier. So with that, unanimous approval, we'll take a break and come back at 10:50 for item 2. Okay, we will reconvene this regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. We are on our second hearing item of the day. If the clerk will please tell us what that is.
Hearing to consider a request by the Crook Family Limited Partnership for a development plan coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2008-00150, Supervisorial District Number 2, Paul Sittig, Project Manager.
Thank you, Ms. Hedges. Ms. Sittig, no, Mr. Sittig, excuse me, any ex parte contacts to disclose?
No.
Commissioners, seeing none? Okay. Mr. Sittig.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Commissioners, Paul Sittig, County Planning. This is for the Wellspring Children's Center, Development Plan, Coastal Development Permit. Application Crook Family Limited. The project, proposed project will demolish existing single-family residence, construct a new 2,200 square foot children's daycare center with maximum of 30 children, 3 staff, operating between the hours of 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Friday with some weekends, providing also 5 on-site parking spaces with 2 drop-off parking spaces. One of those spaces for parking is a van and handicap accessible space. Landscaping to include drought-tolerant native plants, irrigated with drip irrigation, and a gray water system on site. Circled in red is the site in Los Osos, on the corners of 9th and San Ynez, 9th Street running north to south, San Ynez east to west. As in here, it is in the office professional land use category within the central business district of Los Osos. To the north is residential multifamily. To the south is commercial retail. Currently developed, the current development in the area, as we'll see in the next slide, residences on north, east, and west sides, and there is a shopping center or small shopping center to the south and southwest. The existing site, as seen above, includes a small single-family residence and a number of trees. The trees will be removed as part of the project. I'll be showing more in the proposed landscape plan to come. Proposed development includes the development of this one-story structure and parking on site. Shown above is the layout. Actually, I'll go back one slide. Noting the area blocked up by itself is a storage area. This area currently does not meet the side setback standards of 10 feet required from residential land use categories within the CBD. So this area, as discussed by the applicant this morning, we're moving to the front of the property. The front of the property, as being this is a CBD, there is no front setback required. Applicant has not yet provided the redesign of this. They're still working this out with the architect. So they've got some changes in the staff report to come.
Excuse me, Mr. Sinig, yes. Before you move on, this rectangle is a sun porch, did you say, or what?
Storage. Here's a better depiction of things.
Okay. And then our calcs that say it met the setbacks?
That was because
I
was working with the applicant to change the layout, and they did not have the ability to provide something more final in terms of layout and design. So I knew that this was not going to be remaining as such. But these are the only very clean graphics I have to present.
Okay, thanks.
And here's the drainage, preliminary drainage plans, showing 1 foot elevation increases of berms on the sides within the public right-of-way, and then a retention basin in the back. Clarifies that these are in poor health, and also the applicant has, within the short period of ownership, had to remove one tree because it interfered with power lines above. These are actually within the public right-of-way, so the applicant's working with Public Works to clarify the situation and make this a better than it is currently. This is a large stand of trees, but not the ideal situation for them, so that will be improved with the proposed project.
Excuse me, while you're on that graphic, though, Mr. Sittig, how many of those trees would go and how many would stay of that line?
Line is all of them because they're right on the property line. I'll jump back a couple, actually, for better clarification. Here we are. Okay. So this is showing a series of X's where the trees are currently. This is showing the driveway access cutting through where the trees are currently, and the remaining of them, again, being in poor health and something that would probably be removed over time because of trees themselves failing, dying off, whatnot, or interfering with the power lines. So in order to probably best address this at once and get a better situation for the site, at this point and address full possibilities of the site, I feel that it is best to have the replanting done now for all trees. And from 9th Street, these trees will remain. These trees are also within the public right-of-way. And this is looking down 9th Street towards Los Osos Valley Road, with San Ynez running east and west in front of us. This is looking down San Ynez towards the neighboring properties. Concerns raised by had been addressed by members of the community. First off, that of curb gutter sidewalk waivers. The curb gutter sidewalk waiver process is, by and large, one that is done between Public Works and Planning Department. Public Works has a number of areas that they will approve of a waiver. Planning has some also, and there's some that require a joint agreement between parties. This is one such case. The curbs, gutter, sidewalk, as currently required by the county, are only required along 9th Street because of decisions, I believe, by the board. Public Works representative will be able to clarify this more in detail, but there's actually a waiver along San Ynez Street. So San Ynez, the runs in the front, is not required to have curb, gutter, and sidewalk. So this disjointed connection of no sidewalk along San Ynez and a requirement for a sidewalk along 9th, sorry, along 9th Street, which is largely a residential street and probably unlikely to have curb or sidewalk requirements placed upon new residences there. We'll see how that works. It is not something that is creates a contiguous series of paving, if you will. So that's something that currently Public Works and County Planning support the waiver of the curb gutter sidewalk on this property. There's also concerns for drainage and stormwater. This is something that this is a low area and that receives drainage water from a variety of other areas. This has been addressed partially by the berms and also by the on-site water collection area. That is primarily for the on-site water. The berms will help in some small degree to maintain the current flow of water and balance things. This will be reviewed and discussed in detail by Public Works with the building permit. The trees, as discussed earlier, they're in the public right-of-way. The tree removal will be handled with county planning and with Public Works to ensure that this is done properly, and the trees will be replaced at a 1-to-1 ratio on the site itself. And there was also concern about the CEQA exemption, Class 3. There's exemption under CEQA for this project because it is a small development, and the Class 3 development or Class 3 exemptions include things such as stores, restaurants, motels that are less than 2,500 square feet in floor area and have no significant amounts of hazardous substances. As such, county felt that because this is a 2,200 square foot project, that this is underneath the threshold of 2,500 square feet, is within an urban area and generally meets the general standards of this. Further discussion at this point, the staff report, there were some clarifications. First on page 1 and page 3, in regards to the size of the proposed structure. Page 1 says 2,108 square feet. The proposed size is actually 2,201 square feet. Again, on page 3, reviewing the size of the building, the footprint size is not 12,500, that's actually the size of the site. So clarification there again is 2,201 square feet. On pages, page 8 for findings, again to reflect the fact that this is an exemption is suitable under CEQA. Clarification that this is not a replacement, but the demolition of the existing structure to be replaced by a new child daycare center.
Excuse me, where are you, Mr. City?
My apologies, because the project is located on the corner of 9th Street and San Ynez Avenue, two collector roads constructed to the level able to handle any additional traffic associated with the project. With the current level, with the level of service B and no known traffic concerns in this area. Additionally, the project site is within an existing commercial area in the designated central business district. Peak traffic hours will be between 7:30 and 8:30 a.m., noon and 12:30 p.m., and 5:30 and 6:30 p.m. To further elaborate, these peak hours are offset of those of general business. As such, they will not add any significant traffic to the busier times of the day in this area. And this is a generally speaking, collector roads are some of the broader roads intended for higher levels of traffic, and as such, Public Works has felt that this is not a concern. Public Works can elaborate, as can the applicant, in terms of the peak hours. And with that, back to the presentation. Staff's recommendation is for the approval of development plan, coastal development permit, DRC 2008. 00150, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, as revised and read into the record. With that, staff is available for comments and questions.
Thank you, sir. So my district, so I'll just start off here then with some questions generally. Mr. Marshall, on the curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver, I'm not clear on the reasoning for that and the Board of Supervisors' guidance as far as nothing on 9th Street. Will you help walk us through that?
Sure. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I'll do my best.
One of those.
First off, curb, gutter, and sidewalk is required underneath the land use ordinance, and in this case, Title 23, which is the Coastal Land Use Ordinance, and specifically it's 2305-106, and it's associated with building permits. So at this level, we usually, when a MUP comes in that triggers may trigger curb, gutter, and sidewalk, there's a number of criteria, we usually defer. We don't make recommendations for doing street improvements. Public Works doesn't make those recommendations. We let it carry over to the land use ordinance, which allows the applicant to apply for waivers, to do a number of things. It gives them more flexibility. In this particular case, the project is located partially within a waiver zone, as Mr. Sittig has mentioned. The county has a number of, Oceano, Avila Beach, Los Osos, Santa Margarita, a number of the communities within the county have specific areas where curb, gutter, and sidewalk has been waived by the board. I don't have, that's my understanding. Remember, I'm only 7 years here, and I went back, I looked through some historic records, and as early as 1985, we did curb, gutter, and sidewalk waivers based on the waiver area that was assigned for this specific road. So in Los Osos, all numbers, I can run out through the waived areas for Los Osos, South Bay Boulevard, Napomo Avenue, Santa Inez Avenue, which the project is located on, all numbered streets except 3rd Street in the commercial retail zone, which is in the Baywood Park area, and 9th and 11th Streets, which are collectors. So basically, we supported the waiver because the only portion on this project frontage which would get curb, gutter, and sidewalk, as Mr. Sittig had mentioned, is that frontage on 9th Street between Santa Inez and the adjacent multifamily zone. Now, multifamily also triggers curb, gutter, and sidewalk, so on 9th Street, the multifamily would trigger it. However, could trigger it, I should say. However, most of those lots are already built out under single families, so the chance that may trigger the curb, gutter, and sidewalk, so we may never get curb, gutter, and sidewalk on there. So we kind of looked at the whole area, and Public Works recommended that we just waive it, because it's just going to be this little piecemeal piece.
So that's if we look at the sidewalk portion. So tell us more then about the curb and the gutter part of that. So it's a curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver. So we're really looking at three parts of this, I guess.
The land use ordinance specifically says curb, gutter, sidewalk. It's one component. And what it means is you put in the curb, gutter, and sidewalk along your frontage, and you widen the street to match that gutter length.
Yeah, but so drainage is an issue that's been brought up. So drainage and gutters go together. So understanding how the walking sidewalk portion, I think we all intuitively grasp how one little section of sidewalk off on its own is maybe of minimal use. But what about the gutter portion, directing water, and how are we doing that if we don't have a gutter?
Right. Okay, number one, the area, there's a number of parts, number of areas within Los Osos that have flooding problems.
The off-site impact. So tell us about the on-site basin then that's shown in the site plan. Is that an underground basin, or is that
wet
above ground?
Appears to be a shallow surface basin.
And that's taking what portion of this site?
Should be taking all the impervious, which would be the driveway, the homes, anything they build on the site, it'll have to accommodate for.
It would be taking that water, yes, but how much of the site then, 2,700? No, that's saying cubic feet. I don't know what that means. What's the square? That's a good bit of the site, then, that's taken for drainage basin. When you'd think intuitively you'd want some of that site area for kid play yard with 30 kids around.
Sure. If they do a shallow basin, there's nothing that precludes them from using that shallow basin as a playground during dry weather.
Okay, and so fencing requirements then for that? What on our site plan is, if it's wet, that would be fenced separately? And are usable if dry? Or?
Paul City County Planning, they actually have designated a small area as a mud pit. So the applicant will probably be able to talk in more detail. So they recognize that this is an active drainage area and realize that this is a significant portion of the play area for the children. So I think they've taken measures to make this a functional space, whatever the weather.
Okay, so maybe we can hear about that then, whether that would be enclosed and protected if it's wet and somehow deep threat, or if it's not?
I think it's a fairly shallow depression. Public Works is looking at it from the initial review, was looking at having it increased by a foot or half a foot, but it's a very wide area, so I think it's a very gentle slope, not something they could fall in and not get out of, more something you could roll down as a hill, I'm imagining.
Okay, so possibly half a foot, 6-inch depth. And we don't consider that a threat to small children drowning?
Our requirements from Public Works are if you have no deeper than 2 feet and no greater than 5-to-1 slope, then you don't have to fence the basin. Anything greater than that, then you do have to fence it for safety.
Okay, so 2 feet or a 5-to-1 slope.
2 feet and.
2 feet and.
5-to-1 side slopes.
Okay, so we'd be well under that if we're looking at a potential 6 inches.
That's up for the applicant when they submit the building plan. They'll submit a drainage report, and they'll show they have the capacity in this basin, and they meet our standards. And if not, they'll have to redesign their basin accordingly.
Okay. So maybe we'll hear some more about that from the applicant. Trees, then, we're looking at a 1-to-1 replacement. I see non-native trees, but are these all a similar type? Looks like cypress. Are we taking out a whole variety of types of trees, or 20 trees go?
They're mostly cypress, but as they're not natives, they're not required to be placed at the same, but a similar feature and type to the area. The trees, from what I understand, are similar and will fit in with both the neighborhood and within the development itself. I'm not sure if they actually called specific tree types for the project, but the applicant probably can speak to that more clearly.
Just what's coming out.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That's all at this point. Other commissioners have questions. Commissioner White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Sitting. You covered a couple of the technical corrections there that I picked up on, so thank you for that. Just so I understand, this is an office professional zoning, so this is an allowed use because it's equivalent to residential, or?
It falls within the list of listed uses that are allowable. It's a long and diverse list.
Okay. Good enough. The next question was on the curb gutter and sidewalk. They're, from a building standpoint, they're not required for ADA access?
I don't know if curb gutter sidewalk is part of the ADA compliance overall. To be honest, I'm not familiar with that area.
I can try to respond to that. If there are no public improvements out in the roadway, they don't have to provide a path of travel from their building to... If there were a curb gutter and sidewalk out front, they'd have to provide an ADA-compliant path of travel from the back of sidewalk to their building. But ADA, I believe, now here would just be on-site. It'd be from the parking area to the front door.
So no public access from the sidewalks required then? So
well, unless your commission requires... curb gutter and sidewalk.
Well,
discretionary permit.
Well, or if it's not pre-existing, though, there's no requirement. That
you're That's true, yes.
Okay, thank you.
But so, excuse me, while you're there, so if the curb gutter and sidewalk waiver wasn't granted, would that, and we did go along the lines of the curb gutter and sidewalk for some section, would that then trigger some additional ADA requirement?
Let me clarify. You don't get to grant the waiver. That's actually a staff level. However, you can, since this is discretionary, condition curb gutter and sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. So if we were to go there, then would that add on some other ADA conditions?
They would be required to have a path of travel from the back of sidewalk onto their building. I would assume that. I imagine the architect is here, but that's typically the case for commercial facilities.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Thank you. Yeah, I assume we'd get into discussion along those lines, but I'm just kind of trying to get the questions out there right now. And then I'm not going to get into condition questions or things of that. That'll be when it comes back to us. One other question. Did LOCAC do a vote? I see a letter from one of their members, and you in your report you referenced that their comments, but did they have an actual review of this project and do a vote on this?
They had an initial review when the project first came in, and the actual layout of the building and the parking lot were swapped, in so much that the access was coming up from 9th Street, so people will be driving, backing out into 9th Street. That was one of the primary concerns. Our other concerns were that of trees and things of the sort. Then with the redesign, swapping then the layout so that the parking access was off of San Ynez instead, where there's a stop sign on the corner of San Ynez, slowing down traffic there. The redesign addressed the concerns, and they felt that their concerns from the first letter were addressed, in so much that they didn't need to have a re-review. That was my understanding from the letter I received, and I included it in the packet.
Did you happen to know when they did do the review and they had the concerns about swapping, was there full support for the project other than that?
There was they had a list of concerns, and those were the I think their concerns were based on the elements of the project, not the project as a whole. And so they weren't looking at getting the project removed, but they wanted to have the project done properly.
Okay,
so these were the concerns that were then addressed, and then they supported it.
And then if we go to page 2-17, it's a letter from the California Regional Water Quality Control Board. And, you know, we talked about square footage, the 2108 changing to 2201, but their letter is based on a 1,600 square foot building. And that's how my understanding, and on some hours of operation and maximum 28 people.
That's something the applicant probably didn't speak to, because I think they've been in contact with and had provided clarification there. So that, I think the applicant will probably address that more clearly.
That's why I'm getting these questions out there.
Thank you.
and again, if that falls in line, there may need to be some conditions to back support this. So that's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner White. Other questions at this point? Commissioner Grady?
Yes, just a couple. Back to Commissioner White's question about the use. What is a isn't a a children's daycare facility, isn't that a residential use?
It's, I'm sorry, I don't quite recall what category it falls into off the top of my head, but I can research that right now. It's a, it fits in commercial use amongst other things, based on the nature of the use.
But the question is, could it be in a residential category? Is that the commissioner? The question, Commissioner Gray?
Yes. I mean,
would this go in R1? Could this use be in R1 or R2? Or?
Bill Robeson County Planning. There are certain sizes of preschools that are allowed in residential categories. This would be a large daycare facility inside a residential category, which has the same permit level, a conditional use permit or a development plan. So, but this, in this case, it's in the office professional category. So it does fall into a more commercial use than residential because of the land use category itself.
But it could be either to some size, residential or commercial.
It depends on the land use category that the proposed project would fall into. Then we would have to do different standards for that.
Well, that's my point. This is the office professional land use category, correct?
Yes.
So this daycare project is going into that use, and I noted from the Title 23 land use ordinance that if this is considered a residential use, that there are other considerations that would apply, and I just wanted to make very sure that this children's daycare facility is not considered a residential use.
It's not going to be designed as a residence. It won't be used as a residence. There will be no family living there, so it'll be a commercial facility.
Okay. Because there are residential care facilities that
absolutely
definitely are residential use, and I just wanted to make sure that I couldn't quite get that distinction from reading the ordinance.
You're correct. We do have daycare facilities inside residences often.
All right.
This does not fall into that category.
Thank you.
Those are typically classified as small or large family daycares that are within residences. And then there's a daycare center that doesn't use an existing residence and does not have an occupant of the residents on site full time.
So this is one of those, and hence the limitations on residential use facilities in office professional would not apply.
So child care centers, which is really what this is, development plan approval is required for facilities with 13 or more children. So that this is 30.
Right.
So large and small family daycare are, let's see, small is totally exempt, and that's...
what does planning staff think about that?
That project was reviewed by the building department also in terms of general standards for building, and this will also be reviewed again by the building department for final review, not for compliance with building standards. And there was no comments from the building department on the size. I believe, I actually don't know the size offhand, but I believe they're within the limits. You can get pretty narrow for, or apparently narrow for spaces, but that can provide more clarification there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions at this point, Commissioner White?
I did have a follow-up of one that I missed, and you know, I think it warrants bringing up. You know, obviously we all know about septic systems in Los Osos here, and the way I understand, it was on the second page of the Regional Water Quality Control Board's letter. The last paragraph, I believe, the way I interpret that means that it's that the discharges don't reach the levels of prohibition.
That is correct. With their review, they looked at what was potential currently and what's potential with the proposed project, and that given the hours of operation and the type of use, it's a similar use. That was their end determination. So it's a in that essence, it's like for like. So it's not a new discharge, or it's something that it's replacing the existing discharge.
Comparable to the existing recharge. And that's something that maybe the applicant will want to speak to, because you mentioned hours of operation, and there's nothing in the conditions currently that I saw about hours of operation.
Correct.
But then if we jump up to, it's numbered one, right above that last paragraph in their letter. And I know what this says, but I'm not sure what it means. It says you're required to replace the existing on-site septic system with a new system. That's a relatively definitive statement. Then it goes on to say the new system shall not exceed the capacity of the existing system, provided the existing system shall maintain a 24-hour hydraulic retention time. I think that means it can hold water for 24 hours, but can you explain the connection there to me? I'm missing something.
I'm assuming this is a standard that is a current standard for environmental health reasons, and that may not be present on older systems, but unfortunately that's the best I can do at the moment.
I think I may have just had a light bulb go on. Maybe what that means, and maybe we can get a clarification on that, maybe what that means is they're assuming the existing system's not leaking, that it can hold the water, therefore there's the new system will not have any more output. But you reference a system manual, so I was just curious my initial thought was, does that mean if the existing system can hold the water for 24 hours, we do not need a new system?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
And I was just trying to get a clarification on that condition, because it is a condition.
Yes.
But it seems like wasn't the condition in there that there be a replacement?
There is, but then it goes on to speak about the existing system shall maintain a 24-hour minimum hydraulic retention time. So I didn't know if that's an either-or or an unless, or if they're just talking about what the outflow of the new system will be will not exceed the existing system, because the existing system is not leaking, it's holding water. So maybe that's the intent of that, but I'm not clear on that.
It seems to be a design spec for the new system. So we haven't really come across that very often, but we do carry it forward from the regional board.
Maybe the applicant has some clarity on that also. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions at this time? Seeing none, then we'll open it up to the applicants and anyone else from the public who'd like to speak. If you'd like to speak to this item and you haven't filled out a speaker slip, please do. I have a couple in. And the applicant first, Mr. Crook, Jim Crook, and followed by David C.E. Fuller and David DeBink, and anyone else who would like to speak to this, do get a slip up.
May I have to turn anything on? I'm okay.
Can everyone hear? I'm not sure if that is on.
It kicks in as he continues to talk.
Okay. First off, I really feel like that I need to let the commission know what our agenda is. I know the applicant was Crook Family Partnership. I can clarify that a little bit. It's a small family partnership of which I'm a part of. It includes my birth family. It's a very limited partnership in terms of resources and everything. We're not a big conglomerate. It's one that our family formed in order to reap the benefits of what my mother and father left. My father passed away. My mother is still living. She's living with us right now. And for procedures in order to work with his conditions, he expresses his regrets not being able to be here so he can answer specific questions about architectural features. I'm a builder. I trade. My gift is in putting things together. And my wife and I work as a team. She takes care of working with the children, and I can take care of building the project if you so approve it. I would like to ask permission of the commission if my wife could come up and be with me, because she has questions that she can answer in regards to the preschool that I can't. I can answer the building questions, but she can answer the preschool questions if that's acceptable.
Yes, Mr. Crook, of course. Anyone from your team is welcome to answer questions or make statements or definitely. We usually allow 10 or 15 minutes for the applicants at the beginning of the hearing. So if there's anything she'd like to put in now, or if she'd like to just be available for questions, either is fine.
Would you like to? But she has.
We just need you to be at the podium if you're making comments, so we have you down, and to fill out a speaker slip after you speak.
Oh, okay.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm Susan Crook, and I just appreciate this opportunity to address these issues. I was just going to address a few things that I heard questions about. First of all, the catch basin. My understanding is that the way it's engineered, it's a dug out pretty deep, but there's levels of gravel and different types of soil put in so that when it's completed, it's not real deep. One of the things that we do at Wellspring is create environments for children that are nature. We don't have swing sets and climbing structures made out of man-made things. We use nature. And so this works in really well with the kind of environment that we're trying to build. And we call it the mud hut. For us, children need to be in mud and water and nature. And so we're going to use this. And I'm excited to have it. We would have done something like this had it not been necessary, because that's what kids need. And you can address any of the children in our school at any time, and they are so delighted to be able to have that opportunity. And so as for the trees, I am a tree hugger from my childhood, and it grieved me to have to tear out any trees at all. And so I was very strong on needing to get these trees replaced, and to the extent that I would like us to be able to have some mature trees put in, should we be able to afford to. And there'll be at least one for one, probably more. And they'll be natives. The trees that are there now are not natives. They're unhealthy. As soon as we bought the property, one blew down in a storm. And so we are going to address that issue to make it better than it is now. Let's see, what was one of the other ones? Our hours of operation were addressed, I think. They're roughly 7 to 6. Monday through Friday, and so the water issues, you know, we don't have showers and tubs. Those are big draws of water. We're going to reclaim some water. We really, I spent days looking at different fixtures and appliances and things like that that would be the most environmentally friendly for us to use. And so all of those were addressed. We drew up a whole report for the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We came in under 3. We're allowed 275 gallons. We came in under that. I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was 2-something. And so I think they were probably pleased to see that. We're going to actually use less water than what's currently being used. Even though square footage, it's not about how many square feet you have there. It's about the number of fixtures you have and how much water you're pulling. and how many people are there. So we address those issues. And that may have been it.
I've got one other thing. The Wellspring is actually a nonprofit. One of the decisions that we made considering this idea of having a commercial preschool was we decided to form a nonprofit. And so that's what Wellspring is. It's a nonprofit that has been formed. And so we have community members that are actually involved on our board and everything. So give you an idea of kind of the background foundation.
And it's a community preschool, so parents are really involved in everything that we do. And if there are any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions at this point for the applicants? If you will stay close.
Madam Chair. Yes.
Commissioner White.
Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Crook. Let's see here. So if I understand the base and the theory is that it won't...
And the way licensing works is you can get a license that's 1 to 30. You don't get a license for 24 or 28. So the license is 1 to 30. I don't want more than 24 children there at a time. That's my... how I want to do it, and with three teachers. So I don't know if that's why there's a little bit of conflict, because when we talked with the Water Quality Control Board, I had said, well, we'll have 24 children, we'll have three teachers, we'll, you know, there'll be some parents there.
Thank you. But that is our concern, my concern anyway, that water is such, and sewer are such a huge issue in Los Osos. We just want to, I'm not sure how the Regional Water Quality Control Board does their calculations and if that numerical change is a big impact or...
Well, we were told we were allowed 375, how does that...
Gallons.
It's gallons
per day.
So that was our base. And so... everything that we did, how many times people, you know, you have to guesstimate how many flushes are going to be in a day and, you know, how much water is going to be used. We figured using the washing machine twice a day. We figured, I think, two flushes per person a day. We, you know, all those things. And then how much water comes, I don't understand all this stuff, but, you know, the water flow in faucets and all those things. So, you know, there's all those statistics that you can get when you buy an appliance, and we used that, and we based it on that, and we sent all that in. And it was like, at one point, it was just over 200 gallons per day that we would be using. So there's a huge buffer. Even if it's at 3, you still have a little bit of a buffer. So that might be why there wasn't any more concern.
Okay, thank you. And then I mentioned the septic system. Is it your understanding that you'll be putting in a new septic system,
yes,
or do you have an option if the other one holds water?
No, we're the whole septic system is going to be replaced. It'll be brand new. That's the plan. In fact, when we talked about what to do there, that was, you know, we just couldn't increase the capacity. Couldn't be any greater, but we will replace the whole septic system.
Did you have an understanding of what I was struggling with here about the 24-hour hydraulic retention
time? I was struggling just like you, but I made an assumption. I probably should have asked that specific question like you did. I just assumed that we're going to replace it.
Just so it's irrelevant?
I kind of made it irrelevant because that was my plan, that we're going to replace it. Just can't increase the capacity. So I didn't plan on using the old septic system because it's so old. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you.
Okay, thank you. If there are no further questions for the applicants at this point, we'll carry on with public comment. We've got a speaker slip from C.E. Fuller, and on deck, David Dubink. And Mr. Fuller, before you begin, I've noticed you leaning forward with some hearing issues. We do have some headphones in the back box.
Just a little bit low volume.
Yeah, so if you're struggling with that, maybe somebody from the box could hand out some headphones for you.
Would you like some extra copies of my presentation?
Is this the same letter that we received that you submitted earlier? I have a copy here, and I believe we have a copy of this submitted last week.
Yeah.
So it's the same letter, just to confirm there's no difference.
Read this one, right?
Sure. As you will, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Los Osos has no storm drains, depending only on curbs and gutters to guide storm water flow in an uncontrolled manner. Debris, silt, sand, pollution, and trash are carried in stormwater. A case in point is the stormwater which flows from behind Vaughn's parking lot down Los Olivos Avenue, turns into 11th Street, gaining volume and velocity, and turns again at Santa Ynez Avenue, crossing 9th and 8th Streets, then cuts across several properties and ends up in the Back Bay. All along this route, unprotected properties are flooded, drained, and eroded in the process. Two unprotected properties are located on the north side of Santa Ynez Avenue between 10th and 8th Streets. Between 9th and 10th Streets, the south side of Santa Ynez Avenue has curbs and gutters. On the north side of Santa Ynez Avenue between 9th and 10th Streets, a dirt berm and trees on the unpaved right-of-way partly impede the flow of stormwater. Between 9th and 8th Streets, a natural gully has been cut, which allows unrestrained water flow, undermining the street and depositing silt, sand, and pollution and trash along the way. The proposed construction application requests removing the trees in the right-of-way between 9th and 10th Streets, putting in a dirt
berm. I think it's appropriate and something good for the community. My concerns were actually a couple-fold. One, I think, was just a technical one where I didn't like the waiver citations under CEQA, and I have not been convinced by the staff that they're handling this properly, but that's not my central concern. My central concern is that I do not think that there should be a waiver on curbs and gutters for this site. And I cannot imagine a land use activity that would more benefit from a curb and gutter situation than something where people are potentially dropping off children on the site. And when I look at the particular configuration, which I was not able to see, but you have a what I'd call a hammerhead parking lot with narrow spaces, I do not think that this is going to be the only thing that is going to be used to drop off children at this site. The other thing was that it was mentioned that nearby uses were single-family residential. I can, since I own one that's not, I can testify to the non-accuracy of that. If you look down 9th Street, you also find a motel that has been taken over by the San Luis Obispo Housing Authority for low and moderate income housing, so you do have considerable traffic of people who now have to walk on the streets, and if it's a flooding or rain situation, truly onto the pavement. So I think that that is inappropriate as a waiver. I also think it's inappropriate because I now understand that the Board of Supervisor policy is to require curbs and gutters on 9th Street. So actually, this seems to be contrary to the direction of the board. As was mentioned, the curbs and gutters do exist on the opposite side of Santa Ynez, and I see absolutely no reason why they shouldn't be facing it on the opposite side now, even more so after I hear more about the drainage situation. And you certainly can observe this if you look at 9th Street, because there's one of those large cuts in the thing just to allow those that flow of water to go straight across the place. I just think there is no community benefit from waiving the sidewalk and curb requirement.
Thank you, Mr. DeBink. A question for you. So understanding that the potential that if a sidewalk were to be put in, that it ends then and doesn't connect up with another sidewalk adjacent. So you're bringing up the issue of drop-off. Will you clarify that a little about drop-off issues? So even if there wasn't some connectability or connectivity to other sidewalks, it sounds like you're suggesting that there would be some kid pickup and drop-off, and a sidewalk could help with that potentially? You want to elaborate?
There were two questions there, and at least one was the connectability thing. We were talking about this being an isolated site on this. And it's only an isolated site because the property that's next to it has not come in for a permit. So basically, if you do not require this for this site, the person who has the next site on Santa Ynez, which is probably zoned commercial office, would be saying, well, I don't need to build a curb and sidewalk either to maintain the non-connectivity with my neighbor at the daycare center. And then going into the future thing, and I think we have to look beyond the present owners and their intentions of what happens then in the next phase of development of Los Osos, for instance, if you have not required curbs and gutters and roadway improvements of one of the persons along a length of roadway. Now going to the second question, I really can't foresee what parents might be doing about dropping off their children. I think they will just be wanting to make sure they're safe, but I do see a parking lot that is not designed for an easy turnaround or an easy in or out thing, and especially have spaces that are extra narrow in this where you can hardly open the doors of your, what I assume would be a nice SUV to protect the kids.
So moving forward, you would guess then that there would be some street-side parking, and even if the sidewalks didn't connect, that could aid safety for a street-side drop-off.
Well certainly, in a temporary basis, and I just use my patronage for Sylvester's down the street as an example of this, that when I go to pick up my burgers, I park where it's available, and having it be a controlled situation would be far safer than what happens where you just kind of swing it at any old angle.
Thank you. Other questions? Seeing none, thank you. Anyone else like to speak to this item? No other speaker slips in. We do have a representative from Advisory Council here. And Commissioner White, were your questions regarding the Advisory Council discussion answered adequately?
I believe so. I think Mr. Sitting just pointed out that they had some concerns, but those concerns were addressed. I was just curious. In the past, we've asked for, you know, actual minutes and a tally of
the guidelines, and they are on the narrow side. But the space between each side is enough for people to back out. I mean, there are no, it might not be the most ideal, but it works within this piece of property that we have. If we can keep curbs and gutters out of the picture, we can still park perpendicular, and maybe we can put some kind of a surface on that area that addresses that, that's a compromise, as opposed to going one way or the other. It's not that we have any intentions of just, not doing anything there at all. And the safety of children is our life and our focus. And so we wouldn't want to do anything that is unsafe in that way.
One thing I wanted to add was that at the present time, we have Wellspring in our house. One of the decisions we made, we've got a two-story home. The whole downstairs of our home is Wellspring plus all of the yard. And our present enrollment is 18 students, so we have a parking issue in our driveway.
Well, excuse me.
Go ahead.
18 students are enrolled. We have about 10 at a time.
Yeah, okay. Anyway,
Thank you for the distinction,
But anyway, what I'm trying to say is we had parking issues in our driveway, and I discovered that one day when I went out at noontime when we have a lot of transfers. So we made arrangements with our local church. Their parking lot's 100 yards to the south of us. We made arrangements to use their parking lot, which they had totally agreed to. So what we did is contact the parents and ask them to use that facility when we did have an issue with parking. And we took our personal vehicles and our employees, and we all parked there.
So it opens up the space for parking, and that's probably something that we would continue to do, is our personal parking wouldn't be in the parking area. It would be, I don't know if we're getting way off track here, but anyway, it would be
potentially adding impacts if you're parking off-site.
Well, just a clarification, is your house the current site?
Yes.
The existing house that's there now is so...
No. Our house is over on 7th Street.
Oh, okay, so the church parking would not be available to this site?
No.
Trying to understand.
Thank you for...
But potentially some other off-site agreement could be made. So maybe that's something we can talk about when we bring it back here. So thank you very much. With that, we'll close public comment. Sir, we're closed to public comment at this point. Sorry, sir. It's the applicant's end point there, so that's public comment is closed. So we have 8 minutes before lunch. I don't think we can finish this up. So what I would propose is that we get into the issues, spend our 8 minutes, and then come back to it probably after lunch. So I'll just maybe start off here then to note that I guess I still have some questions following up on Commissioner White's about the water use calculations and the Regional Water Quality Board's letter to clarify. And I'm okay with sort of the on-site parking, but definitely the main point for me is the sidewalk waiver or sidewalk requirement here. Mr. DeVink has clearly kind of made the point really on two counts, both the connectability issue and potentially the drop-off situation where it could be helpful to have the sidewalks. So I guess I'd see whether I'm going to have some support or maybe we need to get into more detailed discussion about this and why it's required and why it isn't. I think there's some lack of clarification. At least I'm not at all clear on this supervisor's waiver. So it sounds like maybe, Mr. Marshall, you can help us understand a little better here if I have interest from a few colleagues in following up on this, that we want to discuss it more.
Yeah, I'd like to see the site plan on staff report page 2-26 be put up on the board.
Okay.
While we have this discussion.
Okay, and so maybe Mr. Marshall can go back then and explain to us more clearly what this kind of supervisor waiver that we're talking about is. Here, I've heard this sidewalk waiver zone. So it sounds like Santa Ynez is one of these zones that's waived, but 9th Street is a zone where it is not. So maybe you can help us understand the nature of this waiver zone and how that affects our discussion.
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works again. As I had mentioned, there are a number of areas, a number of communities throughout the county that have waiver areas. Some of those are defined in area plans and specific plans. Specifically, San Miguel shows that. Cayuga shows certain areas where curb gutter and sidewalk are waivered.
And so, that waiver, does that mean we do not have the discretion to require the sidewalks there? Or does in areas where it's down in code that this wouldn't be required, this is an area where it could be? Okay, so we're clear that we at least have the discretion to require that, so then the question would be whether we would want to.
Okay, so looking at the overhead and the site marked by the red box, okay, starting at the corner, going along Santa Ynez to the right to the next street, is any of that currently curbed or gutted or sidewalked?
No. Are you talking about north side of Santa Ynez between the project site?
Starting at the corner
of
and going to the
Santa
right
and going
all the way to the end of the block.
There is no existing curb gutter and sidewalk.
Okay, back to the corner again and going vertically on
there
that side of the
no street. Curb gutter and sidewalk, to okay. My knowledge.
Okay. Are there any undeveloped lots on either side there? It looks like there's structures on all the lots, so I wouldn't say any. Are there any? They don't look like they're undeveloped.
It's fairly well developed.
Okay, but again, I'd like to guide the discussion there. With these things, we're not looking at what's there. It's an incremental process. So we have a danger here in looking at this and saying, well, it's not there now, it doesn't connect up to anything. If we say that, you know, with every parcel, we're not going to get these because it doesn't make sense in a lot of places.
Mr. Wyatt, that's not really where I was going with my line of inquiry. What I was going to ask then is where, at each point then, at the end of the site, where all that, those curbs, gutters, and sidewalks terminate, what would be the effect of at those termination points on the adjacent properties from water running down the curbs and gutters along this one site and then encountering where there are no curbs and gutters?
We run into that quite frequently. Oceano is a classic example of where you have sporadic curb gutter and sidewalk. Most every land use in Oceano triggers curb gutter and sidewalk. Well, it did when we had the big building boom. What we do at Public Works, when they construct the curb gutter and sidewalk, they also have to do some grading within the right-of-way and the shoulder to make sure the water
goes back to its natural flow channel. So we take care of that during the construction process.
Okay, so I'm concerned about adverse impacts on the adjacent properties from erosion, for example, or from the deposition of debris, because water will flow faster where there's curbs and gutters, and then when it hits the adjacent properties, I've seen damage occur at that point, and you're saying that gets taken care of.
Well, the water, the path of travel for the water, but the deposition of the silts and materials and such, and trash will always remain, as long as people dump stuff in the road.
So there's unavoidable impacts.
There are unavoidable impacts, correct.
But impacts greater than the do-nothing? I mean, are we talking about impacts greater than not putting them in? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I don't. I'd like to think that I'm not suggesting that. I think the curb gutter and sidewalk is completely up to your discretion of your commission, whether you want it. It's more of a safety impact. It does help drainage, but usually curb gutter and sidewalk is used to contain the drainage within the street, so it doesn't impact properties. And in sporadic situations like this, you're going to have it impact properties and not where you have it.
Okay. And so I'm also curious then in the discussion, we have the part of the reason for this waiver, the cost. Is there some estimate then of how much this would cost? What are we talking about?
We never consider cost as a reason to grant a waiver.
Okay, but I'm sure I saw that in the staff report. There was a question of feasibility for the project, and then it made the project infeasible potentially because of the cost of the additional cost of the curb gutters and sidewalks. I'm not just imagining that. So then it has been pulled into account here, so it would be relevant what the potential cost of that would be. So I see staff hunting, so maybe over lunch we could get some guesstimate by linear feet or something on what the cost would be so we could weigh that, because it has been pulled in as a reason. And the other thing that I'd love to see, what struck me on this site when I went to Google Earth Satellite and I scrolled around at the intersection of Santa Ynez and 9th on this corner, there are sidewalks on the other side parcel. So I think it would be very helpful for us to see that, because the distinction between the unpaved, unwalked parcel and the sidewalked parcel across was huge. And so I think it would be very useful for us. So maybe if there's a way staff could pull that up after lunch so all of us could have the benefit of seeing that, it would be helpful to our discussion.
I would also like to kind of change the discussion a little bit, or include as part of the discussion the concept of improving safety concerns without necessarily requiring curb, gutter, and sidewalk. I did actually visit the actual site yesterday, requiring curb, gutter, and sidewalk, but I am concerned about safety of dropping off kids. But I don't necessarily think curb, gutter, and sidewalk to this corner is going to address. I mean, it will address it in one way, but there may be other ways of addressing it. So I want to just kind of keep our minds open.
Sure.
To looking at the safety issue separately, or not necessarily as being solved by curb gutter and sidewalk.
So you'd like staff to come back after lunch with potentially some kind of options,
yes,
or
and then also as just commission keeping that in mind. Mm-hmm. That there might be other ways of doing the berms, the landscaping, the finishing of this area in ways that would promote mm-hmm. safety. Because I do believe it is a busy corner, and if we're talking about 24 kids coming in and out, that's a lot of kids crossing the street and running, you know, trying to figure out. They're not going to use this little driveway and parking lot. It's just very small. I mean, some people will, but anyway.
A lot more, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so more suggestions for that. Are there other
things
that
would
be helpful for staff?
Just to follow up briefly on what Commissioner Christensen just said, it appears on page 2-28 there's quite a distance from the edge of pavement to the property line where the sidewalks would be located. And then we look at what's up on the screen right now. You see a light-colored car right above the E in Santa Ynez. Is that car parked, or is that in the traffic lane?
It's parked.
Possibly County Planning. I believe it actually parked the actual grading of this area, or the actual paving in this area is very interesting. Here you'll see what is existing, and you notice that there's the solid line here is that of the paving, and actually curves pretty far in, and it's a very narrow lane of travel there. It's wide enough for a vehicle, but it creates quite a big distance from the edge of pavement to the edge of the property itself. So it's a significant distance.
Yes.
So if the sidewalk were in there, it wouldn't really be traffic in that area.
It would, and it would be pretty far back if you're looking actually at putting the curb gutter sidewalk right at the edge of the property or close to that area. Further explanation or further graphics here. This is a 12-foot distance from edge of sidewalk or edge of paving to interior area. So this could be for parallel parking along the side with space for the berms to be undisturbed, as proposed currently. And this is again 12 foot from edge of pavement. I guess showing just how much space there is between the edge of pavement as it exists both on 9th Street and San Ynez and the property line itself.
So where these berms are located is in the right-of-way?
Correct.
But so it could not be utilized as parking because of the berms?
That was one initial idea, or that was the comments from Public Works initially, is that they wanted to have a clarification that the areas between the paved road and the property lines provide space for both the berms and for parking.
What is the use of the berms? What are they for?
I'm curious too, but Commissioner White, are we okay going a little longer? Commissioners need to take lunch and come back to this. Yeah, I'm a little concerned that we creep too far into our lunch break.
As long as you don't go past 12:15.
Right, but I think we're getting a little uncomfortable, I am, at this point.
Okay.
So let's follow up with your questions then. And the list that we have, I've heard Commissioner Christensen asking for some kind of potential options for the drop-off. And I'd like a cost estimate, if we could pull up those Google pictures of the sidewalk on the other side. Other things that we haven't asked staff for that would be helpful? Cost. Okay. So with that, let's take a break, and we'll reconvene from lunch with this item at 1:30. Good afternoon, everyone. We'll reconvene this regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. We've left off in our deliberations on our second item of the day, the Crook Family Trust application for a CDP. And so we're at the commission level. We had some questions for staff, and so is staff ready with some of those answers?
Thank you, Chair Wyatt, Bill Robeson, County Planning. So we did have a few questions from your commission, and we're prepared to address those. So we'll start off with the Google Maps street view to kind of show you how this curb gutter and sidewalk is working across the street and just kind of the general layout of the street itself. So I'll let Paul take over now.
Thank you, Mr. Robeson.
Paul City, County Planning. You'll see here that the street, this is looking down San Ynez with the residence here on the left as it stands, and the right is the developed commercial center. Notice the disparity between the widths of the lanes here for an idea how wide, how much space, largely asphalt and also the curb gutter sidewalk being up towards this edge of the property, which again is a huge amount of improvements for this area.
It wouldn't be possible to gravel over some of that if
that is
something
other,
less than...
That is another possibility that we've talked to Public Works. They can go in more detail, but in short, we've got some graphics I'll toggle over to right now. Should have quickly done a bit of coloring in on the drainage plan. This area here is approximately 12 feet wide. I think it's narrower towards the corner, but that's just a rough sketch up of my over lunch. This is the parking space in blue here, showing the 9 feet by 18 foot space overlaid the 12 foot area, showing that cars are generally smaller than this space, as this is a parking space and you need to actually get out of a car inside that space. So a car would be even smaller than this, and that would be fitting within this. In terms of aggregate base, Public Works would be supportive of an aggregate base shoulder instead of a full paving. They can go in more detail, but that means that you need to get in drainage plans and a lot more detailed review if you go into additional paving.
So if I could just jump in to clarify, this was a question by Commissioner Christensen about how, if there could be something to be done without curb gutter and sidewalk, but it would alleviate the safety issues that could possibly come about when parents are dropping off their children around the facility. So this is what we came up with at this point. So it's a 12-foot aggregate-based strip in red that you can see.
And this differs from the original proposal how? I'm not clear on the distinction.
Originally, there was no proposed improvements to the road road right-of-way by the applicant themselves. What they proposed initially was the drainage berms, which are in the road right-of-way, which would be at peak at a foot tall. So these are pretty mellow berms, something you could easily walk over and something that would be landscaped with public works approval.
And they're how tall? Is the maximum height of those?
1 foot.
1 foot, okay.
So it's that's looking at, again, the width of the area in the pinkish red color, it's 12 feet. So some of the berms themselves are about 12 feet wide, so 12 feet wide and 1 foot up is not a whole lot of height, or not a huge steep incline.
Right. Okay, and would you just go back to that Google view? What I just wanted to point out was the difference in sort of walkability or look between the sidewalk that's already finished on the other side of the road and the unfinished side. I'm just was struck by that kind of difference there, that is right across the street. With that clean finished sidewalk with cuts. And it looks like it goes, well, some distance down. I can't tell how far down San Ynez then.
Just, I can jump in. It goes all the way. Basically, on one side it's paved, and on the other side it's not. And, you know, as long as it's not raining, and of course we were talking about rain when it is raining, but the left hand side with the big, huge, wide, unpaved areas under the trees is actually much more pleasant to walk on. I walked on it yesterday morning.
Okay.
So I just want to I understand what you're saying about the paved versus the unpaved, but it's not make too many assumptions here.
Again, yes, okay, so we'll get to that. I want to get to the questions there, the view, so people could see that, and then I think it does merit some discussion later. But right now I thought starting with the questions would be good. So we have a look at that. We have a potential cost. We've got some added, kind of middle solution that would add the base then to that parking area. But I suspect we may not want to go beyond that in our discussion of how we deal with safety and parking and walkability there. So let's just at this point, I had a few other questions about options. So would some kind of deferral be an option? In front of us, deferral for this sidewalk, but that would be deferred until some other site had to put one in.
That's difficult for conditioning sake.
It seems like we did that with the Cambria project, that there was some bonding.
You might want to ask the Public Works representative about bonding limits.
I'd be happy. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. If you go through Title 23, the land use ordinance, and we deal with it as a building permit, there is an exemption or a modification to take a bond, and it's under premature development, and it allows the applicant to bond for the improvements for a predetermined amount of time and enter into a promissory agreement.
Okay, so I just wanted to open up the kind of array of options, so in case we wanted to go there, we would know whether that would be an option before us, so it is. And then deferral, and we also talked about an option of some kind of shared parking arrangement. So I'm curious what our land use,
if you want them to, or if they want to come in and voluntarily put in a shoulder, a graveled shoulder.
Okay, so that's something that I believe several of us may have been thinking about. Would be that some kind of diagonal pull-in parking. So you're telling us that is not an option because of proximity to intersection, or?
Well, I'm going to just interrupt before you answer that question, because you can see a car right there is parked mm-hmm. that way. So are they parked illegally?
Yes.
Okay. So,
so what's the problem with
that? Our applicants have talked about the fact that people are going to do that, but that's not really, we can't.
Public Works doesn't enforce traffic violations. Yeah.
So, but what's the reasoning behind that so we understand why that's off?
They aren't pulling out in front of.
Basically, you're backing out into a traveled way. And that's, land use ordinance talks about on commercial developments like this, you can't have more than two cars backing out into a public street for safety reasons. All parking, I think the vehicle code says that all parking has to be parallel with the right of way unless it's actually, you have an ordinance that allows angled parking.
and to put in angled parking. We don't have a rural angled parking. You'd have to put in curb gutter, sidewalk, 45 degree angled spaces, bulb outs at the intersections. It's an extensive amount of improvements.
So that would actually add to the level of
considerably.
Not to
it would be more widening, more pavement, add more pavement to the side of that road, and then we're going to be required that they deal with that on the drain adjustment. So if you just base the shoulder, it's less of an impact for the drainage as well. Right now they have to deal with all their on-site drainage. If you have them do public improvements, they'll have to deal with the public improvement drainage as well.
Okay. So at this point, we're on the topic, you know, kind of on my topic, because I don't know if people have others, but I've got some issues, yeah, with the sidewalk stuff still in water use. So we're here on the sidewalks. Are there more questions at this point, just questions for staff on this, or shall we get into kind of what I see as our two sort of discussion rooms? Do people need more clarification at this point? Okay, not seeing people starting in, let me just open up then. I see kind of two issues here that we were talking about, and one is our immediate safety of a pretty fair number of kids getting in and out of cars at this site. And that's our more kind of immediate issue with our pullout here and our sidewalks or not sidewalks or whatever improvement we want to go with. But the second issue, it's a little vaguer, but it's this kind of issue of pedestrianism and walkability here in what's sort of a downtown commercial-ish area. And so that one's a little less direct and a little more long-term and a little more problematic. And I completely agree with Commissioner Christensen that when the weather is good and that dirt, gravel, whatever it is smooth and okay, it's kind of okay to walk on that stuff. But when the weather isn't good and when that stuff is rutted and when it's dark, walking on that stuff is very difficult. And as someone who spends a lot of time walking around on the streets, I can tell you it's very difficult, almost impossible in the dark to walk on a lot of that stuff because you can't see ruts and puddles and all kinds of stuff. And so I think it's really important that we consider the longer-term implications, as Mr. DeVink has brought up, of kind of skirting the sidewalk issue because it doesn't make a lot of sense out on its own in a spot. And so I don't want us to do that. I'm not sure this is a has-to-be, you know, put-the-foot-down place where we've got to do this. But just because it costs a little money to do it and because there's some sort of vague, unclear direction from the supervisors for some reason we're not too clear on, that it might be here but not there, shouldn't preclude us from the discussion at least. So I'd like everybody to be thinking about that. In a kind of ideal world, I'd like to see us going this way, that if we're really serious about talking about promoting walkability and pedestrianism, that this is clearly a way to make it easier and more doable.
Could I throw my two cents in on
yep.
that topic?
Yep.
In a number of communities that I have lived in, sidewalk on one side of the street was an acceptable development standard. And so that's one reason why I don't, and we have that here, and that's one reason why I don't support sidewalk on the other side of the street. Second, as I look as the Google, I guess Google Street, is that what this is? So we're looking at, and we went down. It looked like we went down two or three blocks, and that entire side of the street was unsidewalked, uncurbed, and unguttered. So to add sidewalk and curb and gutter here would, to me, not be in a character of the immediate neighborhood. So that's another reason why I don't support requiring sidewalks, curbs, and gutters here.
Okay, so may I just ask, though, for the discussion, if we carry it that out, and we have to think in terms of character that we want or what we want to build on, so the current character of the street that it's hard to walk on when it's wet and in the
yeah,
dark?
Yeah, it just seems to me that it's a natural for the parents to pull in, like we see illustrated by the car there, and drop the kids off so they don't have to open their doors into a traffic lane. That's what I was trying to accomplish by eliminating the berms, hopefully. I don't really know what advantage there would be for the curb, gutter, and sidewalk as far as drop-off. As far as your point of walkability, there may be an advantage. But it's just a short stretch, and as Commissioner O'Grady pointed out, they have it appears across the street the sidewalk continues on a lot farther.
could be used instead of this side for night walking or something.
Yes,
is the
other side of the street. Because they're going to run out of sidewalk in a hurry anyway on this side of the project.
But again, looking future farther out, which is what we need to want to be doing.
Well, sure.
Okay.
Well, that's the question I have. Further out, all the others have developed already. How would you do it further down the road? I mean, they'd have to form a district or something and pay for it. And I mean, lots are already utilized, so that bothers me. Saying, well, we'll do it further out, or do it now so this is done further out. So I have a problem with that.
But so for discussion purposes, how would that be evolving over time, and what would trigger? You could have changes of use or additions.
Not to put too fine a point on it, Commissioner Webb, but I don't think you have the support, and we have other things to discuss. I mean, it's nice to have a discussion, but we're not interested in doing it. So I don't want to discuss it anymore.
Like, you know, everybody's weighed in, so you.
I know, but
so we've done that. But that's where I also don't want to just look now down the road, and 20 years later we wonder why we haven't done what we wanted and how the hell it happened, and we're not getting what we want to get because we couldn't
think of it. Let me just say that I'll say for myself that I don't look at every project as a chance to redesign entire communities. I mean, sometimes it's an appropriate place to do it, and sometimes it isn't. And I think for the reasons that have been expressed by Commissioner O'Grady and Commissioner White and Commissioner Malskow, you know, yes, you have a theoretically good point. In terms of practicalities, in terms of realities, in terms of finances, in terms of where Los Osos is and where Los Osos wants to go, I don't really think it's a valid or useful thing to keep discussing.
And you've just summed up the reasons why I'm not going to push for it. But if we hadn't asked those questions and had the discussion, we wouldn't know why we're not doing this.
I thought we had the discussion. You keep wanting to discuss more.
We just have. We've been through all of these things, and I wanted everyone to have a chance to weigh in on this and come up with these points so we can put all of these reasons in our findings for why maybe we're not requiring this. So now we know why we haven't done this.
All right.
So
well,
thank you for getting
more discussion. I thought we had discussed it.
Thank you. We all have ideas of how much discussion is enough, and that's the difference of opinion we're allowed and why we're up here on discretionary projects to make decisions.
Okay.
So I'll drop that. The second question, then we get to a more specific question of safety here for the drop-off and the pickup. So we're in a more specific realm. We've heard a suggestion from staff that base be required here in this area to help somehow keep it from puddling or something from happening. So let's talk more about that so we make sure we've got a safe pick-up and drop-off area and we're not missing an opportunity here. So the proposal would be to add a requirement for base for that 12-foot stretch between the pavement and the berm?
Yes. This is an area that has been depicted in the drainage plans as being ample space for what is proposed, or what is being discussed currently. The 12-foot distance between the edge of pavement and the berms.
So have you talked with the applicant about this?
Briefly, yes, but not in much detail.
And so I would be curious whether this affects the applicant's plans, or the applicants would be amenable to this change? Come on up to the podium, please, so we can hear you.
I mentioned in the very beginning that the Crook Family Partnership is of limited means, and I, because of this economy, I need to emphasize that. I'm a builder by profession. I just came back from down south where I built out our family property near San Diego. I went through the whole process of curb gutters and sidewalks and what you have to do. So I've got a good general idea of what the cost might be, and I've talked to Paul about that. And basically the bottom line is if it costs too much, we can't do it, so it'll just be left as is until we sell it. That's the bottom line.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to say is if you go the whole curb gutter sidewalks, it's not just curb gutter sidewalks. That's not it. You've got to put the pavement over there. You've got to have the subbase.
Excuse me. No, we've agreed that we're not going the direction of curb gutter and sidewalk here. So the direction that staff has recommended to make this okay.
Anything.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. If you'll stay with us, we'll work on some of these conditions. What I'm guessing is that this base would add, the reason this proposal is coming out, because this addition would make this pullout area more stable and level. Maybe we can get some elaboration on how this is helping with our safety versus the original condition language without it.
Let me just, before you do that, my idea was not so much to base the whole perimeter, but to actually make a part of it more obvious designated drop-off short-term parking area. So in other words, it doesn't really need to go around the corner. No one's going to park in the corner, but over there by the where the driveway goes in, that place, I mean, you know, have it be more, this is where you're supposed to be parking and unloading your kids here. And then that way drivers coming by and people who might not otherwise notice, wait, there's people unloading, would have a really more obvious place to watch out for. That was my idea, not to necessarily.
So does this
thing.
Get us there? Is this
it's
getting
too
us
much.
That, to that idea?
Yeah, but this is, to me, too much. You know, I don't really.
So we can decrease the length that you see in red and make it more of a realistic, you know, parking areas rather than, like Commissioner Christian said, around that corner. But people can obviously park where the blue, where that strip is to the right of the driveway.
Right.
And then
stay away
along the other side on 9th Street.
Yeah.
So we can turn that down.
But one thing I would like to add, just if you're looking at putting in a loading or a loading zone,
yeah,
you're not only going to get this. This is a public road.
Right.
This is public parking, so your neighbor could park in this spot if he does this.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be signed for loading unless you get an ordinance. So just to let you know,
yeah,
the
right,
you're
so
that's
what
I
we
understand.
Need to know if what we're looking at is going to accomplish what we want to accomplish here. So
I understand what you're saying. I'm not expecting a, you know, private parking area,
mm-hmm,
but there's tons of parking everywhere, all over the place. And I'm not really worried about neighbors parking there accidentally.
Yeah.
I'm just wanting to have a more obvious place that people would be loading and unloading kids, so that. Just to, you know, not to make it, you know, not to go too crazy, but just.
So you want some kind of demarcation. So is there a way we can do that?
The idea would to be demarcated with the bay, with the more of, okay, this is, you know, this is where cars go. Look, there's a base here, you know. That's
but
the idea. I mean,
still, are you thinking of some kind of striping or space?
No, because I don't think we're talking, we can do that.
Well, that's, I would wonder what
maybe
we could do.
Maybe we're looking at just putting in a gravel shoulder.
Right.
From the driveway, they have to put in a B1A driveway. That's what they're showing. So we could do a 8-foot or 10-foot wide gravel shoulder from the driveway west easterly to the property line.
If you're going to someone's house and they're and you're looking for a place to park, and I have friends in Los Osos, and they have a place that's kind of like flat and has rocks on it, that's where you park. You know that's okay. This is where I'm supposed to park. It's just a more obvious place where this is where cars go and can stop here. And that's all I'm talking about in terms of just something that's not all the way to curb, gutter, sidewalk, paving, everything over.
Okay, I'm just curious why you would differentiate between this area to the right of the driveway and the other area.
The corner area is too close to the stop sign. And so I'm just thinking more. You know, where the obvious, if you've been there, the obvious place is to the right of where that driveway is going to be.
And then how many spaces worth? How many spaces? Is that three
probably, yeah,
spaces worth that
few extra? I mean, this is just not that big a deal, but I just thought.
This is probably three to four spaces, I estimate. Look, if you look at the blue space as a designated car parking space. That's just a copy of one of these spaces. I just traced that outline and overlay it here. So you'd have, I'd say, 3 to 4 spaces, depending on how cars park. And then you have additional spaces over here if you saw it fit to add there. So you've got 6 to maybe 7, 8 spaces.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so let's again go back to kind of safety. If we're looking at a choice between just the one section and the two, putting the base or the gravel then smooths out the area, so you'd have less issue with mud and ankles tripping. And what exactly are we accomplishing?
And more of a visually demarcated area where cars are unloading passengers.
Because there's this strip of gravel is going to do that?
I think it's, yeah. I mean, to me, it's more, I mean, it's something. It's more than just
mud.
Mud and or dirt. It's, that looks like every other patch of dirt all along that road.
If I could also say that, that these will be, the users of this facility will be repeated.
Administration. Does the step on the road help us?
Well, I think it also helps as far as being a good neighbor and not having people dropping kids off further down the block on the other people's property. And since apparently we can't get two signs with arrows that says no parking, drop-off zone only, without an act of Congress, is that what you're saying?
Just the board.
Okay. Then I think the gravel base serves many purposes, including that one. So.
Okay, and are you comfortable with the suggestion that that base would just be the section to the right, or that that would make sense to carry that around, the site on both sides? Assuming people could be stopping on either side or using those.
You know, it'd be interesting to listen to the applicant's opinion on this, but my judgment as to the size of the facility, space there would be sufficient. But again, that's just my guess there.
If I could just interject quickly.
Sure.
I don't think it was staff's recommendation. I think we just came back with the direction, are there other options? Normally, we would not be requiring them to put in a gravel shoulder along here, just a driveway.
Yeah, so that's why I guess I'm comfortable with some of the gravel shoulder, but I'm not sure just that that's a necessary requirement either. Other commissioners want to weigh in on that? Or?
Well, again, if you know, looking at this, it appears that area that... that's highlighted here, that's 12 feet wide for parallel parking along the right-of-way.
Correct.
It just appears to me that if it's 12 feet wide, people aren't going to parallel park along the right-of-way unless no one's there, and then they may. But it's less safe to try to parallel park in this narrow roadway if there's two cars there, you're trying to parallel in between them, than just to angle park or straight park in. How much room do we have behind the gray area where the berm is to the, I guess that's a fence around the perimeter of the project?
Yes.
If that's 12 feet, it looks like we're 30 feet from the edge of right-of-way or the edge of existing pavement to that fence, 30-plus feet.
It's quite possible that's the distance there.
So naturally, people, that's the safest area to be because you're well away from the traffic, and that's where people would want to drop off their children for safety reasons. And not parallel along the roadway, but I'm hearing we're precluded from that with, you know, that it doesn't meet vehicle code. But maybe we can get a little bit of that. The driveway entering from the existing pavement into the project, Mr. Marshall mentioned that it's a standard, some sort of driveway standard. Is it limited on width, or can we widen that driveway to give people room to pull in and still allow access, but they'd have an unloading area?
It is limited to width, but it's a generous limit. I think it's 36 feet wide, so it's enough, well enough for two cars.
The driveway. We're talking about driveway
up,
width.
Up to 36 feet wide.
And your idea, Commissioner White, would...
Well, on either side of that pavement, in my mind, if it were an ideal world, in an ideal situation, push the berms back on either side of that driveway, put some gravel where people could come and park in the direction of the driveway, not in the direction of the right-of-way.
I want your commission to promote parking that's not in compliance.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what in an ideal world, that's what I think would be the most practical.
Yeah. I'm not saying people won't.
And the safest, but I'm just saying that we're precluded from doing that because of the requirement to park parallel with the right-of-way.
The board has adopted our public improvement standards, and that's what we can build in the public right-of-way. And those are the rules we have to follow when we issue encroachment.
So I'm not hearing anything anybody likes too much with this, but I think the question's still at hand. I don't have a strong feeling on how the bit of gravel on the right helps. I have a feeling Commissioner White is correct that, given, as we see from the photo, that if people can pull in, they will. I actually like Commissioner O'Grady's idea the best, that as a condition of approval, maybe we add in some kind of drop-off instruction that maybe that be something given to the new registrants as maybe the most helpful way of kind of guiding the parking along there. I don't see that we have the authority to demarcate spaces or to do the pull-in or diagonal as we might have thought possible.
The applicant could petition with Public Works for some sort of signage if they wish. And they would do that through the transportation department, and then that would go in front of the board as an ordinance.
So if it became a problem then that's an issue, that would be
a
remedy that the applicant could follow up.
Same with striping of the crosswalks and anything along those lines.
Okay. So I appreciate staff's suggestion then that graveling that section could help. I'm not completely convinced how that helps matters or not, that that may just be an extra burden on the applicant. Staff, want to weigh in? Do you see
that? Yeah, one comment on that, or a couple comments. The gravel would help maintain the area that, as it is currently, that
puddling and mud off, running off is an issue. That would help on all counts, and it would then be logical to require that to go all the way around.
I had a question on where the proposed tree removal is in on this schematic you have up here. Is that what the berms are for? Is to replace what the existing trees currently provide as a buffer from the water offsite?
It's the primary reason for tree removal, or one reason, is that the tree removal, you see a very light space here, some notes here. Let's see. This shows it more clearly. These are all the trees here, and the driveway will come out through where the trees are, so partially you're removing the trees by necessity of having a driveway going through the area. Partially because they aren't healthy specimens, and they have in the past become nuisances in terms of the utility lines above. And the applicant is believing this time this would be the ideal time to remove them all and make it just a clear situation, planting trees on site in locations where they'd be better suited for a long and healthy life and will be less likely to create nuisances.
Are the trees in any way acting to deter off-site water? As I assume that's what the berm is for, to keep off-site water from going on to on-site? Is that the reason for the proposed berm? Pardon me?
I can try to speak. When I saw the pictures that that were put up earlier in the meeting this morning, it appeared that the trees sat atop a berm.
Yeah.
So there's an existing berm there right now. They're just replacing what was already.
And the roots themselves may be creating the berms by holding the soil there wherever else the soil is eroding.
So when the trees are gone, these new berms will be to be in place of what's currently existing there.
Yes.
To keep off-site water from encroaching on-site.
And then the on-site water on-site to the same,
right,
the other side.
Right.
And then the applicant is proposing to landscape them with some native material to hold them in place instead of just being bare earth, so they'd have longevity versus hoping.
I mean, we may be precluded from directing how to park illegally, but what I envision here is all the folks parking on top of the berms, because parallel parking alongside the roadway is not the safest way to unload your child. So,
well, but Commissioner White, I think that's a 12-foot dimension right now that's shown there, which is pretty wide, and make it 14 or 15.
Well,
and then people can pull substantially off the road, right?
Mr. Marshall,
and it would allow them to
be much safer.
So,
right.
So, are you suggesting widening that, narrowing out the berm? Or I'm not sure I heard.
Yeah, I was responding to what I thought Commissioner White was concerned about, dropping a parallel parking and close proximity to the street.
Right.
And I saw that was 12 feet, and which I think if you pull in quite a ways to the right there, then there's a lot of room to open your door and get your children in and out. And if you needed another couple feet, just whatever the sense of the commission is as to what's a safe distance.
Yeah, standard vehicle 5.5 or 6 feet wide, so you'd still have room to open the driver door.
Yeah, and you'd still have space for this berm to accomplish its desired objective.
Or at least hold the back tires while the front are over the berm.
Okay, but again, am I hearing some change to the plan, or you're just working with reality and the plan as is? Am I hearing a suggestion for change of the plan? I'm not. I'm just hearing a logical.
I wouldn't want to condition that. If we are going, I think 12 foot sufficient. And then if the applicant decided they want a little more, they could always add that on their own. So.
Okay. So we're leaving that alone. All right then. So I think we beat to death. Do I hear a consensus then that we would go along with conditioning in some kind of gravel or base? Maybe Mr. Marshall could think about that, if one would be somehow better than another, or leave some flexibility there. I would propose all the way around for safety purposes to leave running and runoff.
Well, I was just going to throw that in. If the rationale for it is to maintain the integrity of the chipping away of the edge of the road, then it might want to go all the way around.
Yeah, I would suggest that we would then go with that.
Even though it may not be utilized for parking, it's a walkable area that will help maintain the integrity of the edge of the road.
Right. Okay, so am I seeing some nods that that's the way we would want to go? At least
I don't get
letters?
It. I mean, I thought we opened this discussion with what's required for safety and drop-off, and I thought we all agreed that that one area there to the right of the driveway was sufficient for a safe drop-off area, and that that's the place that would get the heavy traffic and the heavy foot traffic as well as automobile traffic that would then necessitate a beefier area, either gravel or paved or whatever. But then all of a sudden, I see, oh, let's do it all the way around,
okay.
And I don't see the justification
then,
for that.
Then, Commissioner O'Grady, we heard Mr. Sittig say, even after a relatively small rain, that he's already seen substantial rutting in that area. And so I believe we're making an assumption that everybody would be pulling off in that space to the right, and we don't know that. So given that he's already seen substantial rutting and some issues then that holding level, and there could well be people pulling out or parking on the other, just adding to the impact of people stopping and going with the daycare center. So we may have some divergence there.
Well, I wasn't looking at the Google imaging from that perspective. I didn't see the chipping away of the road around the corner. I did see it along the area we're talking about. It looked like it was starting to break away. There's some patching there, actually, that we can see. But it looks like there's landscape cover over the other corner portion, so it doesn't appear that there's any rutting there that would cause the road to break away. But above that, where San Ynez is labeled there, you can see the edge of the road showing, and that, I believe, is where we're talking about putting the patching along that edge where it's been breaking off over time. And I think that's where we're talking about the adding the base. But the corner has the vegetation that appears to stop any rutting or breaking away of the road edge. It appears they've had a problem along that side where the patching has been done.
Okay, yeah. It seems like we're just picking a section, but maybe there's some reasoning then for that section. So I don't have a strong feeling. I would say if we're going to do it, Steph has given us some reasoning for all the way around, but that could be an added cost. I would guess that people could be pulling over anywhere, and because we're not demarcating a drop-off area, it could be useful anywhere. But Commissioner Melskow, do you want to weigh in on that?
I have some reservations. I've seen where they put in base material or gravel material. Then you get a heavy rain, and then the silt and mud from the other air comes and covers it, and then you're right back to what you started with. So I'm wondering if we're gaining...
Because mud from some other area just washes into it.
It just washes into it, stays on top of it, and then you're back to what she started with.
Well, Mr. Marshall, want to weigh in on that with some experience?
Commissioner Melshaw is absolutely correct.
So maybe that would be an argument for not requiring it.
Well,
is that a likely scenario, Mr. Marshall?
From what we heard in testimony, there seems to be a lot of sediments and silts that wash down.
That are washing onto the site.
Yeah.
And
trash, I've heard. So it's a possibility.
It may take a year or two or three, but...
We've done it out on the ranch. We bring in some gravel. We're going to make a gravel road, and then we get a big heavy rain, and next thing it's covered with mud.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if that's going to happen here.
You know, Cal Fire doesn't like gravel roads in the Pomo Sand, and this is similar to the Pomo Sand, because it just... unravels into the sand after a while. Disappears.
Well then, all right. I'm given that in some question of where this would go and where this would not go. Staff want to weigh in, Mr. Sittig, again after this?
Those are all very valid viewpoints, I think.
Unfortunately.
You're given a view of walking the site that is, it's tricky material. Yeah.
Okay.
I concur that it is a sandy material, and I could indeed see how that given the long stretch of water that could come down the length of 9th Street and go on, or sorry, like San Ynez and go onwards, that could have quite a bit of a velocity and some material in it that could drop off pretty quickly and gravel, or the gravel itself could just sink into the sand. So, also very valid points.
Okay, so given the questions raised in what area, then I would withdraw my suggestion that we put it all around and just say we skip it, because that would be an added requirement of questionable value, added cost to the applicant, and we're not sure what the value of that would be. So any other viewpoints on that? Seeing none, let's just draw back on that idea. I'm not hearing any changes then to the proposal for where we're at with the berm then and the street side improvements or lack of improvement. Does anyone have any changes then?
Well, if gravel doesn't get it done, then that drop-off area should be paved.
Yeah, well, now it should be paved.
I think one of the
problems
here is... Well,
we dropped back on the paving because of the expense over gravel, but now we've evaluated that gravel doesn't achieve the purpose, so then we're back to paving. But
and
just that area. We're not
paving
talking
without
about
sidewalks and curbs,
yeah.
Mr. Marshall?
Not advised.
we thought that may be coming.
Yeah. It's either an urban improvement or a rural improvement. We've done paving at bus stops. I don't think this is a private facility. It's not a public facility.
Is the driveway paved?
The driveway will be paved.
Well,
yes.
What I'm saying is an apron off that contiguous to the driveway and an apron off it down for, far enough for a drop-off area.
It's not a county standard. It doesn't meet the standard. So, in essence, I would recommend you stick with gravel. And for the primary benefit is we're not going to increase the permeable surface. You won't. If you pave it, then we have to deal with the water that additional pavement generates. Granted, it may be inconsequential.
But the driveway is paved.
The driveway is paved.
And we've accounted then.
There will be accounted. We know if the commission needs to pursue it much further than that to ensure he has a good drop-off area, because technically he has his driveway. That's his drop-off area.
And if parents are troubled by muddy ruts,
they'll complain to the applicant.
Happens,
the applicant
they're
going to
complain and they're going to do something.
They can come in and get an encroachment permit to do some work.
Okay. So at this point, I'm comfortable with that, leaving that remedy remains, as does the remedy for signage or specifying the drop-off area if the applicants find the need to do so, if it's not working for them. So I think we're at the point where that's kind of micromanaging it. So unless anyone has any other ideas.
No, I think that's a good idea, okay, because the applicant will be familiar with the circumstances as they exist. We're guessing what
we're
they
guessing
may be.
So. And thank you, Commissioner Melskow, that could have, you know, just been a somehow expensive solution, non-solution. Let's just move on then from that to water use. We have received a letter. I need to disclose that during lunch I talked to Mimi Whitner from the Advisory Council and David DeBink. And we have received specific minutes from the Advisory Council meeting of July 2009, which has a little more information about water use and water calcs. And so I wanted to bring that out there because that's something we started talking about earlier but needed probably a little more discussion on. And so there's some discrepancy here in the numbers we're seeing for water calcs. In the staff report, somewhere I believe we have 202 GPD. For estimated water use, then I've heard something like 300 or a potential allowance of 375. And in the Advisory Council minutes from the July 09 meeting, I'm seeing calcs of 675. So we're seeing numbers all over the place. My suspicion is that the calc of 202 is pretty low. If you do just run that through 30 kids max and a few staff people, 202 by 35, you're at something like 3 times 2, 6 gallons a day per person, which is maybe just a couple of toilet flushes and no hand washing or clothes washing or anything. So the one issue, I guess, that's new also in that letter from advisory is the notation that currently it's a house, a residence with one bathroom. Is that true, that we're looking at replacing? I don't know if that's factual or speculation. Yeah, if you will come up to the podium, because that adds in a little extra messy element that I think we shouldn't gloss over if we're going from a one-bathroom residence to something else. Please, Ms. Cook.
It is a one-bedroom right now. And what I had said earlier is that there's no showers, there's no bathtubs. That's where you get, I think, the most of your water usage in a home. The fixtures that we've investigated and that we're going to be purchasing are very low flow. We're going to be reclaiming water. We're going to be doing a lot of things that are proactive to use less water than is typical. And so we actually calculated it all out, and I apologize for not bringing all that with me. I didn't think about it, but we sent all that in to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So it isn't that you replace toilet per toilet. It's about total water use. We've never heard the number 600 and whatever, and I think Anita did, and that didn't come from the Regional Water Quality Control Board either. So what we were told was that each residents can use 375. So we knew we had to come in no higher than that. So we really worked at making sure that we came in less than that so that we had a buffer. And the number that we did come in at, I guess, was the 202, which does seem low. But when you talk about low-flow toilets and hand washing where you can, I forget. Okay, it's timed. So it decreases a lot of water usage.
Okay, so were there more specific questions? I guess the one question was that somebody had asked, I think from that advisory meeting, how that fits in then with Los Osos. Are people allowed to switch out and add fixtures right now in Los Osos? And that was a question then if you're going from one bathroom to, I don't know how many bathrooms, toilets
there's
are.
Three bathrooms.
Three on the new plan. Is that allowable or?
Well, what we were told is that it's the Regional Water Quality Control Board that says, you know, what's allowable, and
right.
We were told that, that's not true?
No.
Oh, we were told that everything that we have in our plans is allowable.
Okay, we do see the letter in the packet, but there's just still some discrepancy in the numbers, as Commissioner White pointed out earlier. Can staff help elaborate on that?
I think the applicant pointed out that earlier there was the initial application to the Regional Water Quality Control Board was for a guess of 24 children to be there.
Page 2-17, our staff report, mm-hmm. The second paragraph is what we're talking about. That was one issue, is the numbers were lower than what's being proposed. So I'm okay with prorating if that's, but I don't know if the plans that they reviewed, because they referenced a 1,600 square foot building, had the same plumbing fixtures as the proposed project. They reviewed it. And the other question that I have is they talk about limitation on hours and no overnight and no weekend use. But I didn't see those conditions in our conditions of approval. So those are my questions on this letter.
Does staff have some response
I can just try to clarify a little bit. Bill Robeson, County Planning. What we look for is a letter of concurrence from the regional board, which we have, and that's the letter that Commissioner White is talking about. So they do a calculation, and you can see that they've found that the existing residence is going to generate or require more water use than what the facility is putting out. So the last paragraph in that letter talks about that. So it says that based on the water board staff calculations and your projected water use, it is apparent that both wastewater flow and nitrogen loading rates generated by the proposed school will be less loading estimates than the existing original building. So that goes to just wastewater, actually. So I'll stop talking then.
Okay, so I'm guessing since we're not seeing more...
Again, to clarify my question, this letter from the Regional Water Quality Control Board references a 1,600 square foot preschool. So did they see the same plan with the same number of plumbing fixtures in it that we're being asked to approve here today? Because if you go down to footnote number one, it says these calculations are based on the Uniform Plumbing Code and what the output of a plumbing fixture may be. So if they didn't have a three-bathroom plan in that 1,600-foot plan, then this letter may not be appropriate for the approval that we're being asked to make. So that's my clarification question.
Gotcha. One point of possible clarification would be that I believe that their review in this case is based on the number of people there and not the number of fixtures, because each person can only use fixture. I guess you could have a fixture for each child, and that could maybe change things slightly, but I don't think that every child would be using all fixtures at all times. So really, I think that it's based on a per person instead of a per fixture. So you could have increased the amount of space and the number of fixtures, and I believe that would not change the number, the end calculations, because I guess this is all my guessing, because I don't know their exact process, but looking at some of their information here, I think that the size of the building doesn't matter as much as the number of users.
And we can easily make the number of users by adding on that incremental difference work within
right.
this threshold, but it's an important point that you brought up.
That's a reasonable assumption, and I'm not saying that it's wrong. I'm just saying that I don't know either, and I don't know, we don't have an updated letter from the Water Quality Control Board, so I don't know if we're all willing to go along with that assumption or not.
Gotcha.
And then again, about the hours of usage would go into, you know, how often people are there to use these facilities. So I didn't know if this limitation of use is acceptable or agreeable with the applicant or not for no weekends and these hours, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Because if they are, then I think they should be in the conditions of approval.
Okay, so with you. So let's put that to the applicant then, since we're at that part. Also, so noted that we would want to condition those limits. Are you comfortable with conditioning those
limits? Well, I just want to understand the condition. So it would be 7 to 6 Monday through Friday with no weekend use at all.
That's what regional quality control letter says.
Is it possible to talk with them again?
Well, I would suggest that to meet your concerns, Commissioner White, that maybe we do want to have something in here, because there is arguably a substantial difference between that 1,600 square foot building they referenced and what we're looking at here at 2,200 and a few extra users. So maybe we do want to note that somehow and
provide
for another look.
Yeah, my opinion is, in reading the second paragraph, well, and the difference, the first paragraph, the consumption, as footnoted, is based on the Uniform Plumbing Code for numbers of fixtures, residential use, and the Central Coast Water Board Basin Plan. But the second paragraph says the Water Board staff understands, probably from information provided by the applicant, that the proposed preschool is anticipated to use about 204 gallons of water a day. But again, in the first paragraph, it appears to be based on a smaller school.
Right.
And then perhaps fewer plumbing fixtures. So.
And lesser operating hours than we have in our conditions or project proposal.
Right. So I think a revised letter from the Regional Water Quality Control Board would be prudent.
Okay, so I'm with you there, because we do have... Okay, and the number of users then.
That way they can pick the hours that they think they need and the square footage, and the regional board can either say yes or no.
And they would have the ability to take it up to the max and still fall within the threshold.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, great.
So that would be going back around to the applicant at this point, Ms. Crook, what hours you would like to request then if we were going to approve a project conditioned on Regional Water Board's approval, what operating hours you're looking at.
The way we work now, it's about 7 to 5:30. The extra things that we do some cooking for the homeless in the evening. Parents come in, and we do that a couple times a month. And we have what we call family gatherings about every probably 2 to 3 months, where we all gather together for a meal on a Saturday afternoon, and we're usually there for probably 4 hours. It's difficult to say. I mean, I hate to see us say you can only be at this building between this hour, and it's illegal for you to be there at any other time, because my prayer is that this would be a place where community can come.
People could use, you have to be, but you understand our dilemma, that the regional board water calcs are based on it only being used some fraction of hours.
But the positive of that is that we're at 204 gallons based on almost 30 people, 28 to 29 people being there. And that gives us a lot of room to use more water.
But that's where, so you're comfortable then, if we didn't request some limited hours, that you would put the request in
without a limit on hours, then, that you could still meet their standard. And that's the dilemma here. We don't. I suspect we don't want to limit your hours either, but if they've made some kind of water usage calculation based on a limited number of hours, that could pose a problem with them on down the line.
Well, if I could answer to that, and I understand what you're saying, if you have a lot of buffer there. So what I, from what Mr. McNulty just stated, what I envisioned is you can take this existing letter that we have to the Water Quality Control Board, ask them how they can adjust this letter to the maximum possible for you for hours of operation, okay, water use, because you do have that, it looks like, one-third buffer there. So maybe you would be able to have allotted enough time to where it wouldn't encroach into your normal operations.
Okay.
But that's... But we're kind of stuck with what we've got here.
No,
and,
I understand.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I think the issue is the regular operation of the daycare center, not these other accessory uses that they have occasionally. I don't know that there's really a county need in terms of implementing our zoning regulations to limit the hour of operations for any other reason.
Right.
I think if you simply require an updated letter from Regional Water Quality Control Board before a building permit is issued, then it can be between the applicant and the regional board as to what the parameters are for occupant load and hours of operation. I really don't see a need for the county to get in the middle of that.
Right.
Issue.
I agree, because we're not seeing any conflict here with adjacent uses or any necessity to limit the hours. And I fully agree with the applicant that if this thing is getting built, better to use it more than not and conserve a need and provide some service. So am I seeing agreement then that that's a direction we're comfortable with going, adding that condition then?
Yeah, I think that's fine. The scope of work spells out a max of 30 children and 3 staff persons. So however we word it, we don't want it to conflict with that.
Right. I mean, it would just be an updated letter then, a condition requiring an updated letter of approval then from the regional board with those maximum of 30, and we wouldn't be limiting hours, so they would have to revisit that for their water calcs and the size of the structure in case their calcs have been based on structure size.
You could say exactly that, an updated letter from regional reflecting a maximum client number of 30 and a square footage of 21, whatever it
22.
Is, Paul, 2201.
Yes.
And, reflecting
and
that
hours.
Project. And then how they work out the hours and everything, I think that can be between the regional board and the
So essentially, yeah, and that's what I was getting at. We're essentially asking for an updated letter that matches the project description and that will condition the project to comply with that letter, but that is the way I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think we're all in agreement there.
We have some draft wording on the screen, if you'd like to look at it.
I'm sure you get the correct square footage in condition number one, because I see two different numbers
right
there.
We're not there yet. And we
in
still need
line.
To change the 2108 to 22... That's it, 2201. Okay, got it. Yeah. All right, so we've got that added.
I think the 12.5 was correct in the second one that was changed. I don't think it needs to be changed in this context. Parcel is 12,500 feet. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we've added in that condition then. We've decided we don't want to add in operational hours limitations. I did hear a suggestion from...
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Sorry to interrupt, but if you go back to 1, you have 201 square feet. It should be 2,200.
No,
it's there.
It.
Oh, you got the 2 in front of that. Okay,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
I didn't get that even there.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so we're comfortable with those changes. So I did hear a suggestion Commissioner O'Grady made about a conditioning for the drop-off kind of plan, and I thought that was a good idea since we have concerns about the drop-off.
So does staff have some suggestions, or are there comments or concurrence from other commissioners that maybe we do condition in some kind of language that registrants would be given sort of a drop-off safety plan upon registration or some such, or is that going too far?
Yeah, I didn't intend to make that a condition. I was just surmising if we did provide a designated area by means of gravel or paving that was a safer drop-off area, that the applicant would just explain that to the clients. But I wasn't suggesting we condition.
Okay, but I'm taking it there, I guess, if you weren't then. That may be a practical way if we have concerns about whether people are parallel parking or what they're doing with that parking area, that would be a reasonable condition. I don't have a strong feeling, but it may be a way to handle some of those drop-off concerns. Anyone interested in that or not? I'm not seeing any interest in that,
well,
and I'm not...
I guess where I'm coming from on that, you know, I heard a long time ago when they, you know, a lot of times when a school was built or a campus was built, the sidewalks and trails weren't installed because the students told them where they needed to be. And that might be the case here. If we have a drop-off plan, the parents and the children may show us where it should really be. And so maybe, you know, the applicants can work with that as time goes by.
Okay, so I'm comfortable with that then. So
I think the applicant has a comment on that.
Just so that you're all assured, we actually at our school have a 5-hour orientation mandatory every August for all parents if they want to attend the school. And that's an issue we already address, among many others. So whether you're required or not, it's going to be addressed. So you can have, I know it's my word, but it's true, so you can have some peace there.
We try to take people at their word around here, believe it or not.
We try. Well, they're around, yeah. Okay, so we've incorporated the letter from Water Quality Control. So let's see, I'm trying to see if we had any other suggestions for changes to conditions.
Yes.
Did you have more conditional changes? I had some findings. So
yes,
conditional changes?
I have both.
Okay. So let's stay with conditions for now, and then
okay. Let's
go to findings next.
All right. Approved development. This also included a request to waive curb, gutter, and sidewalk requirements. I mean, shouldn't we say curb, gutter, and sidewalk requirements are waived? I mean, to reflect.
Can we just scratch that whole sentence?
Certainly.
Yeah, I guess since it's not approved, not part of the development, that'd be clear.
Okay.
So thank you. Sure.
Okay. And instead, let's say it also included as a new septic system.
Sure. Sounds good.
And then did any commissioner want to include the projected operating times are 7 a.m. to 6 p.m.
No, I think we agreed we didn't want to limit
that.
That may be limited for water use by the regional board,
okay,
but not something we want to do.
Okay, I didn't see the public works recommended conditions listed anywhere.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I think those are extremely important.
I think they are also. I would like to see them there. They are taken care of, but it's not as... And I could read them into the record if you'd like to do that, or we can just defer to our referral, which is on page 2-22.
How many of them are there, Mr. Murphy?
There's two.
It would be helpful if you read them in and we place them here. If although maybe what I'd recommend is we're past due for a break, so I'd recommend maybe you could get those up on the screen while we take a quick break, and then we'll come back to that. If we could just take 10 minutes, then we could get those up on the screen.
We have a bathroom break at 3.
Oh, well, I need a break now. So let's just take the advantage,
and
the opportunity
the
to get those up. So I'm going to use my...
Submit complete drainage calculations to the Department of Public Works for review and approval. Drains must be detailed and detained in the shallow basin on the property. The design of the basin is to be approved by the Department of Public Works in accordance with county standards. The basin is to be maintained in perpetuity. New number 9. For the life of the project, that project shall comply with the requirements of the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System Phase 1 and or Phase 2, Stormwater Program and the County's Stormwater Pollution Control and Discharge Ordinances 3143.
Okay.
And then further down, just a note adding under fees, under the old item number 10, new number 13.
And I think between us we had some changes and additions to findings that we'd like to see. So we've already made changes to number 1, changing the size of the project and taking out the waiver for the sidewalks. And so I'd like to see us adding in some language explaining here, though, why we're not requiring the sidewalks. So if other commissioners are comfortable, I'd like us to tell that story a bit of why we're not requiring sidewalks here. I heard several reasons, including cost, that they're on one side of the street, that they don't match existing character, and that they'd be set back so far as to be useless.
And board policy.
And board policy also. So maybe we could throw all of those in there as reasons why we're granting this waiver. Are people comfortable with those, getting those in there that we discussed? So I heard cost, or I'll tell you when you're ready. I'm not sure we want all of those in there, but I'll throw them out there as I heard them. Curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements will be waived with this project because...
May I make a suggestion?
Sure.
You don't actually have formal approval over the waiver.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you say the curb, gutter, sidewalk improvements are not needed for this project?
Sure.
Because...
Sure, since it's not an official waiver.
Right.
Yeah, got it. With this project because I'd say the first one and most compelling argument I heard that there are sidewalks on the other side of the street, although it, to me, it made this striking difference, but I see the other commissioners and there's some compelling argument that walkers could choose that side of the street. The cost would be prohibitive or make the project infeasible. I don't know. I'm not, if people chime in, I'm not sure we need all of these, but I'd like us to tell some bit of why we're not putting them in a commercial-ish area. Cost?
Yeah, I would refrain from cost personally, but I would say they are in a blanket waiver area.
Okay, because they're in a blanket waiver area. The project is in a blanket waiver area.
Rather than saying it that way, say they're in an area where sidewalks have not been required on the north side of the street.
Even better.
But I'd hate for us to go there because we're not putting in sidewalks because they're not required. Well, let's think ahead. You know, we don't just put in sidewalks because they're required. We put in sidewalks because they make some sense. And we can't just say, well, they don't make sense here. And we could, but...
Say something about the orderly development.
Because board policy has indicated that sidewalks aren't required on the north side of the street.
Somehow, board policy.
Because it is a board policy.
In infinite wisdom, they have made this policy, and we're carrying it through.
It was something they did by board order in the 70s. It wasn't formalized as a planning area standard, as council noted earlier.
Okay. On the north side of San Isabel. Okay. And I heard then the other reasons. Maybe that's enough reasons. I heard that it set back so far that it would be useless, but...
That wouldn't necessarily be the case. It'd be
okay,
20
I don't
feet off the
think so either.
Center.
Glenn, do we want to say something about it or not required for drainage control?
That would actually be a good one.
Okay, that would be useful. Thank you.
Thanks, Warren.
That's we had some question to what degree that would help with drainage or hurt.
That may be enough right there.
I'd say I'm not compelled to add the others then about cost and setbacks and existing character because I don't necessarily agree. Okay, so thank you. That helps. And then what about water findings? We don't have any specific mention of water in these findings. We've had some discussion, and water is of great importance to this area, still in moratorium. So I'd be more comfortable with this project if we had some findings incorporated addressing our water calculations, or the approval that we have, or our conditioning approval from the regional board or some such.
Well, we find that the water has been satisfactorily addressed subject to conditions. So we've addressed the water.
So can say? Are you suggesting we say it that way?
Just as simple as that. Yes.
Okay, I'm comfortable. And that serves my
purpose. Is your point the availability of water to serve the domestic needs of the project, or how it's disposed of?
Clean water. Good.
That may be actually the way to do it.
That's probably a good way, because that is the analysis we're making. That is the 375-gallon threshold that the regional board has set.
And you might want to preface that with as conditioned.
Okay, thank you. So, Commissioner White, want to read us that again? I liked that, too.
Well, I just took it off the top of my head. As conditioned, the proposed project will not generate any more use of water or sewer disposal than the existing use on site.
Thank you.
Something along those lines.
I like that.
We can clean that up a little bit if you like.
Comfortable with something like that?
Well,
as conditioned.
To say as
conditioned.
Thank you.
The proposed project.
And wastewater and clean water, I think. And water demand. Okay. Comfortable with that wording? Yeah, okay. So water, and then the tree removal is the other allowance that we're making here that's been called into question. So I'd be more comfortable explaining why we're doing that. I've heard several reasons. I've heard the nuisance as far as the power line, and that they're unhealthy trees and non-native, and maybe some other reasons. So I'd like to get those in there, why we're allowing for the 20 trees to come out.
Well, we've heard that they've fallen, so that they pose a safety hazard.
Unhealthy and unsafe. Thanks.
They pose a hazard because of their quality.
Thank you, Mr. Hogue.
The conditions of the trees and
the unhealthy
and location
condition.
Of existing utilities.
Well, let's be more specific here on what does that mean. I don't know what that means. Let's say by the unhealthy conditions of the trees making them unsafe and their conflict with the existing power lines. Let's tell the whole, they're unhealthy and they're unsafe and they're messing with the lines. Again, reasoning for this, we have other trees that we're looking at being an issue removing kind of similar trees. So I'm just trying to tell the story here of why we're not making a ruckus of these trees and some others we are. So there are distinctions, so I think it's important to explain them. So the removal of the trees located in the road right-of-way is justified by the unhealthy condition, let's say unhealthy condition of the trees.
And the conflicts with existing utility.
Thank you. And the conflicts with existing utilities. Okay, let's just add that the trees are unsafe.
How about they're creating a hazard to health and property? How does that sound?
Something, adding the safety issue.
I just think that it could be made simpler by saying justified by the unhealthy conditions of the trees representing a potential safety hazard and the conflicts with existing utilities.
Thank you. Same.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
If I could jump in, the applicant just let us know that the trees at the front of the project on 9th Street will also be removed.
Is that increasing our count from 20 upwards, or is that included in our 20?
That's included in the 20, isn't it?
It's included because all I
oh, but
just from
okay, the road right away. Okay, right. Let's just why don't we just leave out the road right away and just say the removal of trees is justified
okay.
wherever they're coming out and not specify.
Why don't you preface it by the proposed removal of trees?
Okay.
So it goes back to the project description and.
In the conflicts with existing utilities. Okay, those were my changes to findings. Other commissioners have changes to findings or additions they'd like to make? Commissioner O'Grady is nodding yes, please.
Let's go up to C. Okay, that got taken care of. Then in D. When we get down to the one point we're trying to make there, it just seems superfluous to me.
Actually, we use that quite often.
We do?
In this finding to demonstrate that there are other regulations that also
okay.
provide protections.
Okay. In E, the second line, after the word development, I would propose a period there. And that, because it goes on to say, because the child care facility is similar to and will not conflict with surrounding lands and uses. I didn't see anything in the staff report that said this child care facility was similar to surrounding lands and uses. The only one in the area.
Just take out
"is similar to." Conflict with surrounding.
That
would be fine.
Thank
you,
Mr.
Oak. I'm sorry, I'm interjecting.
No, I'm
just getting us where
I'm just
go.
Throwing out my concerns and inviting fixes or comments. And then on F, that talks about traffic, and it said two collector roads are constructed at a level able to handle any additional traffic associated with the project. Was there a traffic report to that effect in here that I missed?
There was not. No.
So I didn't find any evidence for that finding that was presented here today.
I received that from our traffic division just this morning. They did a quick analysis for me just to make sure.
Okay, I just heard evidence to that effect, so that's fine.
if I might just explain. When a project gets a categorical exemption, it doesn't get the level of review that a project with a negative declaration does. Otherwise, we would have probably had this information in the negative declaration. But consulting Public Works, we've got the evidence, and we put it in the finding, and I hope that that is sufficient for your commission.
Oh, it is, but just since these are findings that we've made today, I couldn't point to where I had evidence for that, which is why I brought it up, and I'm satisfied for sure.
Okay, just, but I'm not, before we leave F, is adding the peak traffic hours between 7:30 and 8:30, noon, and blah, 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 is that helping our case? Because in a way, if we're saying no traffic concerns, I don't know how announcing that our traffic will be during peak hours helps that case. This is not a big issue, but...
This is a language I added recently, the notion that this was clarifying that the hours would not strongly conflict with the surrounding businesses, in so much that people who would be traveling to businesses in the area would not be going in these generally in these hours. Lunch hour, yes, but in the beginning and ending of the day, you would be going to the salons or the restaurants and things of that sort that are in the neighborhood.
So maybe we should say something more along those lines, because I don't see that final sentence. That doesn't seem clear exactly.
Possibly you can just simply retool the second to last and last sentences to say, additionally, the project site is within an existing commercial area in the designated central business district area, and the project's peak traffic hours will not conflict with those of the other businesses.
That's fine, and that supports our case.
Yeah.
Just
hopefully
whereas I'm not sure the current sentence supports the case there.
The last thing I have may already be covered, and then I'm getting confused whether we covered it in conditions
and not in
findings. But the curb gutter and sidewalk, did we make a finding about that, or just
We did make a new finding H.
It's H.
Where we're explaining our reasonings for that because of board policy. There's a sidewalk on the south side.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I wasn't sure whether that was there or under condition, so I'm satisfied.
Okay. So that's your list then?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So I guess that's our list. Findings as read. No one else has any additions to those. Then I will make the motion that we approve development plan CDP DRC 2008-00150 based on the revised findings listed in Exhibit A and the revised conditions listed in Exhibit B, both as read into the record by staff.
I'll second.
Okay, any other discussion on that? Okay, the clerk will please call the vote.
Chairperson Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Belstrom?
Yes.
So with that, we have a unanimous, if somewhat soft-spoken, approval of the project. Thank you to the applicants. Good luck with getting this done.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, yep. And we'll move on to our third item of the day.
This is a land use category map of the area. So as you can see, there's quite a few surrounding zonings with the commercial retail in red. To the south of the site is commercial service. That's what is being requested. And then to the north and east is the gray, which is industrial. Here's an aerial of the site. It is currently currently developed with a single-family residence, and there's also a Templeton Community Services District well on the site. Again, as you can see, towards the west is the commercial retail area. It's currently still vacant. There was a recent tract map in this general vicinity, so there are some improvements, but I don't believe that tract has recorded yet, but that some of the improvements have been done. Then to the north and to the east is the industrial area, which is has been built out. The applicant is requesting to change this from commercial retail to commercial service, and their immediate intention is to put a small trucking business on the site. The applicant has a trucking business in the city of Paso Robles and would like to relocate to this location. The site was previously zoned commercial service, but back in 96, as part of a larger project, or hopeful project, it was rezoned to commercial retail with hopes of doing more of a regional commercial center, which never happened. So that's why we're here today. We believe this request is just a minor change and is consistent with the general goals of the land use element. The site also meets the defined purpose and character statements for commercial service, and we believe it's better suited for commercial service than commercial retail. Staff is recommending that your board recommend to the... Oh, let me go through these photos real quick. There's the existing single-family house that shows towards the west, again towards the west, towards the highway. And this is what the, towards the east, what the existing commercial service area, or I'm sorry, industrial area is built out with now, also to the industrial area. And there I'm back to my recommendation that we would like your planning commission to recommend to the board to adopt the negative declaration and improve this general plan amendment based on the findings. And I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Mel. Before we get into questions, any ex parte communications to the project? Okay, seeing none, Commissioner from the district, want to start us off?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Mel. I guess my only question is, the way I understand it, besides the zoning, we would be changing the area standard for this particular site
would require a minor use permit rather than a conditional use permit.
That's correct. We felt that this site didn't need to carry forward that CUP requirement that was slated for the larger commercial retail development.
So the remaining 25 acres would stay under that?
Correct.
And if a regional center did come forward, do you see any conflicts with this site and the remaining 25?
I presume it would be focused towards the freeway to capture that freeway visibility, and it probably would be a good transition between this site and a future commercial retail.
Okay. And then I think the only other question I had was a technical question on page 3-8 of the staff report where we have exhibit. I didn't know if we should add an A to that exhibit. I noticed on 3-9 we have down at the bottom it says exhibit LRP 2009-004. Should it be an A?
Yes, thank you. That should be an A. When I take that forward for the board, that will be critical. Thank you.
Okay, that was it for me.
Not such a long list, Commissioner White. Other questions for staff at this point? Questions on the project? Okay, seeing none, let's open it up to the applicant and anyone here from the public wanting to speak to this. The applicant here? Hi. Please do just tell us your name and if you will fill out a speaker slip once you've spoken.
Sherry Gibson, I am representing Lexington Building Corporation, representing Mr. Thomas O'Done. He is regrettably not here, so please don't take that as a rebuff towards the commission. He is, it is a small business, and he is behind the wheel of a truck. So that is what he's doing this afternoon.
And just don't, you're here to answer questions then?
I am, yes.
If we have any, no presentation. Okay, are there questions at this point? Okay, seeing none, if you'll stay close, we'll see where we go with this. Thank you. Sir, are you here to speak to this project?
No, I'm just here in case there was any questions in regards to the actual trucking aspect.
Go again here. down at the bottom of the page, it says, our public works department has reviewed the response to comments prepared from the traffic engineer and still find deficiencies outlined in the attached memo. And I didn't see an attached memo, and so I'm curious as to what those deficiencies might be, Mr. Marshall.
Sure. Well, Mark, County Public Works. It's a secret.
No,
the originally approved traffic engineers, in this case we asked for a traffic engineer's report because we were concerned, especially the impacts of Main Street at 101 and 46 at 101. And the traffic engineer provided this analysis. I worked with our transportation department. We had some minor concerns with trip distribution and turning movements. And Karen, does that sound like she's got a better memory than I do? I think it's trip distribution and turning movements are the primary concerns. I went back to the traffic engineer. They addressed those adequately, and we accepted the traffic engineer's report.
Okay, so those deficiencies referred to there have been resolved.
Those have been resolved, and this memo was to Karen saying, okay, they've resubmitted, they've addressed our concerns.
Great.
And those have been addressed in the conditions for the project, or those were kind of questions that were just figured out?
Once again, I think those conditions will come with the development plan.
That's correct. It would be a minor use permit, actually.
Minor use permit.
And it was basically trying to figure out for this applicant what their future traffic fees may be. So we were trying to see if there were impacts associated with this business, and was it a deal breaker for the applicant for how much traffic fees they may have to pay.
Okay, so that will come back then with the minority permitting for the actual project.
But as we've discovered with the traffic study, very little peak hour trips are required by this applicant the way the trucking business is, and we're not talking about the trucking business today, but the way it is there's very few peak hour trips.
And in general, I think we had the consensus is they're actually reducing the zone. Karen can speak to this better than I can, but the zoning itself, the reduction in zoning, reduces the number of trips. So overall, if you just look at the general plan amendment, it's a better situation from transportation traffic.
The assumption is less trips with CS than CR usage.
Correct.
Okay. I take it the remaining commercial retail parcels are under different ownership?
That is correct.
Okay. So staff's opinion is that to taking these 5-point-whatever acres out of the commercial retail wouldn't compromise the viability of a commercial, future commercial retail development.
That's correct, and I believe there's multiple owners of that commercial retail area now.
Okay.
So it's picking up a lot right now.
Okay, those are all my questions. Thank you.
Okay, other questions, comments? Okay, seeing, hearing none, do I hear a motion?
Excuse me, just 1 minute. Mr. Hogue noted that on my exhibit needs to be a little, I just lost the page. The exhibit that shows the area that's being deleted.
That's page 3-9.
3-9, thank you, which is my exhibit B. There needs to be some notation that that is the area to be deleted from that planning area standard. So I will make that correction in the graphic that goes to the board.
I had a note here, this site hashed out, that ID's the area, the hashed. So you'll
essentially just
note.
Put a label on the map.
Oh, this shows
the site to be deleted.
Deleted, okay. Yeah, I did have a note to that, but I thought that might be getting...
Just looking at it without that notation, it just seemed like it wasn't clear what we were doing.
Okay.
Thank you.
In D, on the findings, I'd like to add one more bullet point. Specifically, the proposal to rezone only 1/6 of the existing commercial retail zoning to commercial service will not compromise the viability of future retail in the area. If that's okay with my colleagues on the commission.
Anyone not comfortable with that finding? Staff, want to comment on that or comfortable with that? Addition?
Would you mind reading it one more time?
Sure. The proposal to rezone only 1/6 of the existing commercial retail zoning to commercial service will not compromise the viability of future retail in the area.
Okay, looks like everyone's comfortable with that additional finding. Okay, any other additions or changes? Okay, before you move over. Okay, and then we'll close the meeting.